A welfare state is trapping people not just in poverty, but out of work. Young people in particular. And that is a poverty of ambition.
But do you believe it? Will they achieve anything? In other news, after weeks of fevered speculation, it would appear the jury is out. Justice Secretary David Lammy explaining why he's reforming the jury system.
Is it right, someone who steals an iPhone, is it right that that individual should be able to opt for a jury and therefore delay the rape, the murder, the more serious offence?
And the Justice Secretary will join me later in the hour. The strike mayor before Christmas, the doctors on strike again at a time of real pressure for the NHS. Dr. Thomas Chariotis-James is with the BMA.
I would hope that we can come up with a deal as soon as possible. We have put several offers on the table, several proposals that we feel would be acceptable.
Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, jury trials could be limited to murder, manslaughter and rape cases as part of plans to overhaul the court system. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will lay out the proposals later after a leak of the plan last week. The Crown Court backlog in England and Wales stands at nearly 80,000 cases. The Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden, says radical solutions may be needed.
There's a very significant backlog in the court system. There's an old saying, justice delayed is justice denied. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Ministry of Justice were looking at changes as to how they could clear that backlog and make sure that people get justice in good time.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says resident doctors will cause untold anxiety with a pre-Christmas strike. Members of the British Medical Association in England are planning a five-day walkout from December the 17th. They've accused Mr. Streeting of failing to put forward a credible pay offer. Zoe Tidman from the Health Service Journal says it's likely to cause significant disruption.
Winter, everyone knows, is already such an incredibly challenged time for the NHS. And now you're going to have a reduced workforce of resident doctors make up a huge part of it. I think the decrease in support is really notable among the public.
Rachel Reeves has been accused of using the head of the budget watchdog as a human shield. The Conservatives have renewed calls for the Chancellor to resign following the departure of the OBR chief, Richard Hughes. He stepped down yesterday over the early publication of its official budget forecast. A girl has died and another has been seriously injured after a crash involving a minibus carrying 9 teenagers. A woman's been arrested in connection with the collision in Tadcaster in North Yorkshire yesterday. The research by Age UK suggests more than a million older people in the UK could spend Christmas Day alone. Its ambassador, Dame Joanna Lumley, says it's a crisis hidden in plain sight. The charity says 5% of people over 65 will not see or speak to anyone over the entire day. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 97. 7.02. It closed down 17 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather feeling colder today with sunny spells for many. Some scattered showers in the south and west. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Driving can often be a bit ordinary. The commute, the weekly shop. But with SEAT, it's never an ordinary drive. Because right now you can get an extra £500 off the SEAT Ibiza and Arona on top of existing offers. Just order by the 15th of December and take delivery by the 31st of December. Search SEAT offers to find out more.
T's and C's and exclusion supply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New stock vehicles only. Subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven on Tuesday, December the 2nd, as the Prime Minister speaks of a moral mission to cut welfare spending, it's worth reminding him that they handed out an additional £16 billion a year in benefits just a few days ago. More a moral maze than a moral mission. We'll give you more details on that. In other news...
A police chief's been hauled before MPs to deny claims a decision to ban Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from an Aston Villa football match was based on false intelligence. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper with the full report on that tense exchange.
Coming back to government initiatives, the jury is out. If David Lammy has his way, he'll join us later in the hour to explain why, save for the most serious of crimes, you will not be able to elect to go to jury trial. In other news, yet more industrial action from our doctors. Here's last month Health Secretary Wes Streeting giving his views for the resident doctors and their continued industrial action.
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise.
And they're going out again. We'll give you full details on that. Plus,
the tobacco-stained streets of this London borough cost tens of thousands of pounds a year to clean up and are caused by the spitting out of a stimulant called Parn. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Wembley.
And if you want to lift the mood, and dear God, we'll need it after that, John Cleese coming in to talk about a book he's recently released, marking 50 years of Forty Towers. He's with us later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, let's get more on this supposed moral mission from the Prime Minister, from LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Most newspapers portraying this as an attempt to sort of stave off the criticism over the budget and try and shore up support for the Chancellor. What did you take from it? What's the story? What did you take from it? Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the Prime Minister, I am told, will be pushing ahead for more welfare reform, but it ain't coming any time soon. And as you say, after giving his backbenchers an olive branch in the form of lifting the two-child benefit cap at the budget, multiple government sources have told me the Prime Minister will be gearing up at some point for a fresh fight with them in order to try to bring down that bill. The PM said yesterday, reforming the system is a moral mission for him.
We must also reform the welfare state itself. That is what renewal demands. This is not about propping up a broken status quo, nor is it because we want to look somehow politically tough. The Tories played that game, and the welfare bill went up by £88 billion, and they left children too poor to eat and wrote young people off as too ill to work. That was a total failure.
But let's just rewind a moment to see what Labour's plans on welfare have looked like so far. They knew they were inheriting problems when they took office. The election manifesto promised to look at reform of the system, but was very vague about what that would mean. You'll remember earlier this year, the government brought forward plans to cut the welfare bill back in March by just £5 billion. It would have restricted access to personal independence payments to those with higher needs and universal credit for some Brits. But of course, MPs not happy about that. It just took a few months of lobbying. Eventually, over the summer, the government was forced into a humiliating U-turn where almost everything was stripped from their package. The Prime Minister said at the time he was listening.
But the most important thing is that we can make the reform we need. We've talked to colleagues who've made powerful representations, as a result of which we've got a package which I think will work and we can get it right. And for me, getting that package adjusted in that way is the right thing to do.
And since then, Nick, there's been relatively little movement from the government on welfare. But in last week's budget, it was confirmed the two-child benefit cap would go.
Because I am cracking down on tax avoidance, because I am reforming gambling taxation, I can announce today, fully costed and fully funded, the removal of the two-child limit in full from April.
Now, Nick, the Tories dubbed it a budget for Benefits Street, but it has been a spiralling bill for years. Digging into some of the figures from the OBR last week, they say budget policies will increase spending by £11 billion by 29-30, mainly to pay for reversals to those welfare cuts and to lift the two-child limit. That will increase benefits for 500,000 families by an average of £5,300. That's according to the OBR. They also say there's significant uncertainty around the future costs of welfare spending due to the growth of the disability and health caseloads. Nick, this year the government will spend £300 billion on welfare. Around half of that goes straight on pensioners and just under half on working age children and welfare. That includes £75 billion on disability benefits. It's totalling 10.8% of our GDP. Now, at the moment, the government do not have a plan to cut the welfare bill. They've only just launched what's called the TIMSS review, looking into disabilities benefits. That is going to take a year. There's also another review by Alan Milburn. It's looking into why so many young people are claiming poor mental health. That is expected to take several months at least. And of course, the question, Nick, are MPs going to back it? One government source says they think that Labour MPs do get the need to do this and they will vote reform. One I know was actually so confident he made a bet that that would happen. I will be going back to that man at some point in the next year because, Nick, I just don't see how it's going to happen.
OBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. More reviews and VAR. 9 minutes after seven. Let's bring into conversation a Labour MP for York Central, Rachel Maskell. Now, just to remind you, of course, Rachel Maskell has been suspended from the party for rebelling against previous attempts to reform the welfare payments, and joins me now. How supportive are you, Rachel Maskell, of the Prime Minister's moral mission? Good morning.
Morning. I do believe that this is the mission that we need to really focus on. With the scale of spend in the DWP, we've got to look at what is happening, not just around disabled people and young people, but across our whole economy. And unless we bring significant reform, we just simply will not be able to afford the bills. And let's have a look at some of those figures. The largest spend being on pensions. We've got to recognise that we've got to be able to afford that. We've got an ageing society. And if you look at economies like in places like Singapore, their whole focus of their government now is on an ageing population. And I do believe that's got to be our focus as well, because the scale of increase in pensionable age will mean that we simply will not be able to afford our way forward. But we know that we can get that on control of that if we see more people in work, because obviously more income, people are building their pension pots, and that's why it's really important. And to move with the youth guarantee, £820 million, move young people out of inactivity into work, absolutely must be our drive.
So what does that focus look like then, Rachel Maskell?
First of all, the government are right at looking at young people to ensure there is seamless transition from education into work and being able to support young people. Yes, we know that we are facing a mental health crisis, and Alan Milburn's review will dig it deep into that. But we need to support young people through their education, which has been lacking because the Tories just focused on how people fared in their exams, not in the holistic well-being of young people. We're putting the resources in to do that, to ensure that we get young people into work, because we know work is good for your health as well as obviously the economy. So that's going to shift nearly a million people into work, must be our mission. But on top of that, ensuring that we are doing everything to help disabled people into work. We know at the moment there's around an 18-week wait for getting the access to work funding, which can help bring those adaptations to employers to help disabled people into work, and that would make a significant difference. And then finding in the world of new technologies how more people can engage with the labour market. So we're in a point of transition. I recognise that you have to invest to spend, to save, and that's certainly what the government needs to do to ensure that we get health optimised for people into work. But what I would say is, if you look at the data, it maps onto the NHS waiting list right through decades. When the NHS waiting list rise, so does the welfare bill. And that's why we've got to really focus on getting that NHS waiting list down, where we know that 6.24 million people at the moment are still on those long NHS waiting lists.
So has your opinion changed since the summer, or have the facts changed, or how do you align this with your stance from a few months, you and your colleague's stance from a few months ago?
My opinion hasn't changed. Those people that can't
what
work...
What was so egregious then in the summer, might I ask, Rachel?
Well, it was the fact that people who couldn't work would be losing vital benefits and would be pushed into poverty. And that's something that came out in the impact assessments. And we couldn't afford to do that, because ultimately that then places more long-term spend on the welfare bill and means people are more dependent on the expensive NHS. So, of course, getting the right levels of support is absolutely crucial, keeping poverty away, but also ensuring we're optimising those opportunities for disabled people and people that economically inactive to get them into work.
How confident are you that there will be some form of cut to welfare payments prior to the next general election, assuming it goes full term, that is?
Well, I do believe that if government just come in and cut and push people, it will push people further away from the labour market. So what I would say, it's got to be an invest to save model, and I do believe that can be turned around very rapidly. I look at the efforts of my own local job centre, where we have a very low level of unemployment in York, and the phenomenal work that is being done with the partnerships built to support people in very difficult circumstances into work. It's so those kind of schemes that we need to see.
Lastly, if the Prime Minister or any of his team are listening then, where is the area where cuts could be made?
Well, what I would say is that we, first of all, I'm not looking at a cuts agenda. What I'm looking at is an investment agenda.
So you want to spend more?
Well, no, investment isn't about spending more. It's about getting people into work. And as a result of that, So you're looking at a shifting of resources to enable people to... We don't need to cut
£406 billion, Rachel, by the end of this decade.
And that's why the bill will come down if you're making the right investments. But as I say, we have to look at what's happening.
Well, the bill will come down if you cut it, won't it? No?
Well, unfortunately not, because you'll be pushing people further away from the labour market if they are unable to be self-sufficient and supporting. For instance, cutting PIP, the very thing that helps people to get into work. If you cut that bill, it means people are less likely to be in work than in work. So we've got to recognise that if you make the wrong decisions here, it could cost more. And therefore, what I'm saying is, let's invest and then turn this equation round so that it works for the whole country, and particularly looking at how we ensure that we're putting the investment in through an ageing population. Okay. And that has got to be the focus of government.
All right, grateful for your time. Thank you, Rachel Maskell, your Labour MP for York Central. You were one of the rebels from the summer. Just to tell you that we're going to go from £300 billion to £406 billion by the end of the decade, helped in no small part by the additional spending, £16 billion, that was announced last week as the Prime Minister talks of his moral mission. Yet again proves that the sums simply don't add up. And there will have to be cuts. It's not a question of more investment. It's a question of cutting those who should not be in receipt, isn't it? And talking about numbers that don't add up, Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray, talking to the House of Commons yesterday of the continued fallout over that budget, and off with his head. Well, that's the head of the OBR, Richard Hughes.
This is a very serious breach of highly sensitive information. It is a fundamental breach of the OBR's responsibility. It is a discourtesy to this House, and it should never have happened.
Do hang on, we are going to give you a chuckle.
Your lambs will be getting cold, Mr. Johnston.
Colder?
If you'd like them warmed up.
I get it.
You could get your wife to sit on them.
50 years on, Fawlty Towers, John Cleese joins us. It is later in the show, but look forward to that. 7:16 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Plans for juryless trials are expected to be announced as part of efforts to cut the court's backlog. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has condemned a pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors in England. And the Conservatives have accused Rachel Reeves of using the head of the budget watchdog as a human shield. LBC weather feeling colder with sunny spells for many, some showers in the south and west. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M1 southbound, Junction 10 at Luton Airport. There was an accident. All the vehicles involved have now been cleared, so all the lanes are open, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the Essex stretch of the M25, anti-clockwise from before Junction 29 at the A127 to 28 at the A12, and that's where a lorry has broken down. Severe delays on the A12 southbound to Junction 13 at Ingatestone, and that's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Also, delays on the A13 westbound to the Gorsbrook interchange, and that's because of an accident, and very slow on the A1 northbound from Apex Corner up to Stirling Corner following an accident.
This is LBC.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone, and keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in tax and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
At Morrison's, we're serving up something a little bit indulgent for Christmas. Pick up the best baked feta made with Greek feta cheese, creme fraiche, smoky Spanish chorizo and hot honey. Approved by Good Housekeeping. Ooh, tasty. Morrison's, making more of Christmas.
Majority of stores online. Offer and prices may vary online and in Morrison's daily.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus binding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
So are you buying it, this so-called moral mission? A couple of points to take into account. One, he raised it, well, he allowed his Chancellor to raise it, by £16 billion last week, including the £3.2 billion bill for scrapping the two-child benefit cap. That means we are on course for £406 billion by the end of this decade. Now, some of that, as we discussed, is the pension entitlement. I understand all of that. If this was an attempt to try and shore up a rather crumbling budget, when you've even got journalists from broadcast media now effectively accusing the Prime Minister and his Chancellor of lying, are you buying it? And then when asked, will there be a cut in benefit spending, as I asked that MP, and by the way, she can't speak to him, it's the Prime Minister, but he's not available today, will there be a penny cut in benefits by the end of this decade, by the end of this Parliament, I'm sorry, he can't guarantee that. This is all just smoke and mirrors. It is palpable nonsense. Mal, you'll be the first caller on that. Quickly through just some of the front pages, tell you what the story is. Well, there's still fallout from the budget. I mean, do you remember the good old days when the biggest fallout of the budget was that there was a tax on Cornish pasties? That would be now seen as an utter triumph compared to where they find themselves now. The Daily Mail, the fool guide for Reeves' budget lies. That's farewell to Richard Hughes, off with his head, the head of the OBR. That's the front page of the Times. OBR boss quits after PM's budget leak rebuke. That is also the front page of the Eye, and, excuse me, it is also the front page of the Telegraph, although they spell it out even more bluntly. Reeves clings on as OBR chief silenced. To the LBC app, well, they're getting you ready for David Lammy's appearance on the show a little bit later. Mr. Lammy to unveil historic plans for swift justice, but unfortunately that swift justice will mean the scrapping of jury trials in all but the most serious cases, such as rape, murder and manslaughter. And let's take another one. Absolutely at random. Here we go. This is the front page of Sky News, which is looking at the five favourite Christmas movies. They give you the whole list. I don't know how important it is to you, but if you're a fan of Elf, then you'll be pleased to see how he's or they're doing in that list. All right. Mal's in Carshalton. Mal, how much of this are you buying? Good morning.
Not much. I'm not buying anything that they're selling. I'm unsure how you have the patience to speak to these people, Nick, if I'm honest.
Well, it's my job to try and get them to represent for the benefit of you and other listeners who pay my wages, so I don't have much
option. Absolutely.
But I'm not buying, I just don't buy a second. I mean, when he can't even say that he's going to trim it by a few million, by the end of this lifetime of this Parliament, it's pathetic to me.
I think it's an understatement. I think it's the sentiment you hold, I think it's for the country at the end of the day, Nick. But yeah, unfortunately, I understand the welfare state very well. I think I come from it in the sense that my mum utilised it when I was younger, being a single parent. And she didn't like taking it. She did all the jobs she could at the time. So I get it. I do understand poverty in that sense.
Right.
I come up in the council system. You know, I now own my own house, so does my mum, and so on. But the reality is, I think, I know a lot of people that are on PIP, for example. Young men in their 20s, anxiety, can't come out of their house, but then they'll come to the cinema and all these other things. Now, I understand the need for it, because there are people that actually do need help. I get it.
Of course.
Happy to pay my way.
Of course.
But the reality is, there are a lot of people. There's a system that can be taken the mick out of, and people do. And I know people that haven't worked for like 18 years, and, you know, our tax is paying for that. I'm happy to pay for a service that actually looks into this stuff, actually handles it, actually the people that need the actual money get it. And that's the main thing, but this won't be solved. It's a complex problem, I get it, but there's no answer. Just fluff.
You don't see a way that it can be rationalised and made, as you rightly say, those who are in need are looked after, and those who are taking us for fools to the tunes of billions of pounds are not. You don't see a way of doing that?
There's always a way of doing it, but that will obviously cost money. But who do you think in power to actually govern such a responsibility.
I don't see anyone currently with the ability.
That's the main problem. It's a complex issue, but at the end of the day, I don't see anyone looking into it or how to handle it, just putting more money into it. It's a very much like the NHS, touchy subject, I know, but pumping more money into a problem that has massive holes and leaks isn't going to solve it.
Lastly, if you ever challenge the people who you know are working the system, who are perfectly fit and well, but they're claiming all sorts of payments for emotional distress, if you ever say, well, why don't you get a job? How might they react to you?
I've done this.
What do they say?
I do it in a sensitive manner.
Yeah, of course. I don't mean in an aggressive fashion.
Yeah, of course. I've struggled. You know, I have a friend of mine who's been down his luck over the last, you know, 6-7 years. And for one reason or another, he came out of prison recently. And he's so upbeat and tries so hard to do everything and get stuff. And everything is against him. Everything is against him. And he does not stop trying. Whereas said individuals that you just mentioned don't bother. They don't need to. But they struggle and complain about money, which I completely get because they don't actually get a lot of money. But in the same breath with Pip, you know, it's frightening.
Mal, thanks for the story. Fascinating that you come from that background and indeed as your mum and you're doing so well now. Congratulations to you, Mal. Have yourself a good day. 7:25 is the time. Let's come to other stories. And the one that does dominate many of your front pages, the head of the Office for Budget Responsibility, OBR, quits after being publicly rebuked by Sir Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves for that accidental leak of details of the budget before the Chancellor even took to her feet. Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray, updated the House of Commons yesterday with this.
This is a very serious breach of highly sensitive information. It is a fundamental breach of the OBR's responsibility. It is a discourtesy to this House and it should never have happened. The OBR rightly took full responsibility and issued an apology to the Chancellor.
Let's turn to Susanna Streeter, who's an independent financial commentator, was the BBC business anchor and joins me now. Some of the media are portraying this that the head of the OBR, or former head, is the fall guy for Rachel Reeves. How accurate is that depiction in your view, Susanna? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I think after the OBR made the colossal mistake it did by enabling through its systems for this publication early so that journalists could get their hands on it before she stood up. I think once as well, you had the chief spook, essentially, former chief spook from the National Cyber Security Centre coming to help with the investigation because they were concerned that perhaps it was a hack. After all of this, somebody had to go and take responsibility because it was highly embarrassing because the markets need clarity. They need to all as well work at the same time without all of this kind of prior leaking or mistake of release. And it's just highly damaging for the OBR's credibility, but also actually for the government's credibility as well.
Susanna, how shall we remember him? The Richard Hughes professionally?
Well, he certainly had an illustrious career in the Treasury and he's stood up to the government, numerous governments, and really tried to ensure that the OBR's forecast was independent. I think part of the problem was, and he was pretty steadfast in wanting to maintain that, is that the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, published 2 snapshots or report cards on the government per year. Arguably, that is too many because it leads to all this speculation. We've had months of speculation and that's been highly damaging because we've had the spring forecast and then all these kind of updates and briefings going along, and that makes it more difficult for the government because in a way they've had to keep changing their plan on what they're going to do in the budget rather than there is one forecast per year, we'll go with that one. But because there isn't, and he didn't want to change that, he can't really, because it was set in law, but he was pretty steadfast in saying, look, Rachel Reeves might want to change the plan, but I'm going to stick with what we have always done. I think all of that meant that there was just this standoff, and I think that really also made his position a bit untenable.
And lastly, as a journalist and an economic expert, how do you look back at that budget from last Wednesday and its attempt at implementation?
Well, it was pretty incredible. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, very frequently on those big days, whether it is the budget, whether it is any kind of release of market sensitive data, so inflation or the Bank of England publishing its results of its minutes, we're all there anxiously waiting for that link to be released. You keep refreshing it. It is incredible that it was released 40 minutes early. I think it was unprecedented. And it led to this, you know, these scenes of nobody was watching the Chancellor because they were just going through the OBR. And it was chaos, really, in newsrooms up and down the country and on trading floors.
Susanna, thanks for your input. Susanna Streeter, independent financial commentator, former BBC business presenter. Thanks for your input on that. Calls coming. Tristan, I hope you can hold to the other side of the news because we do need to get to news, but I want to hear what you say about the welfare cuts. Also, coming up after the news...
The UK strikes a deal with Trump to pay more for some medicines in exchange for access to the US market for British pharmaceuticals. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing this shortly.
And it's worth reminding you that the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will be here later in this hour, as of course it is announced that they want to scrap jury trials for all but the most grave offences. He'll be joining us later in the hour. It's 7:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news, Thomas Watts.
Jury trials could be limited to the most serious crimes as part of plans to clear the court's backlog in England and Wales. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will lay out the plans to reform the system later after a leak of the proposals last week. The Health Secretary says plans for another resident doctor's strike are a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas. Members of the British Medical Association are planning to walk out for 5 days from December the 17th as part of their pay row. The Tories have renewed calls for Rachel Reeves to go following the resignation of the budget watchdog chief. Kemi Badenoch has accused the Chancellor of using Richard Hughes, who left the OBR yesterday, as a human shield. LBC weather feeling cooler with sunny spells for many, scattered showers developing in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Keir Starmer delivers a speech to the country having cheered his Chancellor on in spending £16 billion more on benefits, that actually it's a moral mission to try and find a way of reducing that amount. He actually wasn't particularly committed to say he wanted to get the bill down, so I don't know what this reworking of the benefit system he wants that doesn't change the cost of it. A quarter of the working age population of this country is receiving benefits.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4pm. Listen on our free Global Player app. Or the new LBC app.
Everything has led to this moment. The Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. 2 decades of evolution have created the refined SUV with true Porsche performance. With enhanced personalization, athletic detailing, and high gloss black finish, the Black Edition isn't just driven, it's felt. This is the moment where style meets precision. The brand new Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. 20 years in the making. To book your test drive, search Porsche Guildford or visit Porsche.co.uk. Porsche, there is no substitute.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11am. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33. Delighted to say, Tristan, you have been able to hold and we'll take your views on this attempt to cut welfare in a moment. But into the world of business, Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM and joins me now. Christian, we're going to be talking about our resident doctors later in the show who have called for yet more industrial action, but the NHS is making other forms of headlines as regards cash. What are they? Morning.
It is indeed, and good morning to you, Nick. Yes, not possible to talk about the pharmaceutical industry in this country without talking about the NHS. And patients will now be able to gain access to new drugs that are currently judged to be unaffordable by the NHS as part of a deal with the United States, which will see the amount the UK spends on some medicines rise by about 25%. This is expected to push up the NHS's overall drugs bill by about 3 billion quid, but spread over some time. Because the ministers have agreed to raise what they call the value for money threshold. Now, it might be a bit morbid or a bit callous, but basically the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, the regulator, tracks the cost of a treatment for every healthy year it delivers to a patient, and its upper limit for approving a treatment is between about £20,000 and £30,000 for every year of life. But under new rules, they're going to raise that to £25,000 to £35,000. So that's a decent enough increase. And in return for paying more for new drugs, the Trump administration has agreed that the UK will be able to continue exporting its drugs made in the UK at a 0% tariff. He had threatened to put huge tariffs on it. And as we've discussed before, the pharmaceutical industry, for various reasons, considers the UK to be not the most attractive market. Well, this will help. It's certainly been hailed as a win by ministers, by the US as well, and by the industry. So quite a big shake-up to the way in which the NHS is going to pay for medicines, but also a shake-up to the way in which the UK can continue to access the US market.
When I looked at the front pages earlier in the show, I saved one, held one back for you. It's the front page of the Daily Mirror and a punchy one too. Justice for the lost victims. This is the Horizon scandal. What are the details, Christian?
Well, police officers who are investigating the Post Office Horizon IT scandal are now considering charges of corporate manslaughter. Now, that is where a corporate entity is held responsible as opposed to an individual. In an update shared with victims, the National Police Chiefs Council has said that they are focusing on 8 suspects for that corporate manslaughter consideration. Interviews have been conducted under caution. There are 53 people of interest. And the IT system, which you can trace all the way back to 1999, we know the impact of its deficiencies. More than 900 people were prosecuted. Some went to prison. Some died while waiting for justice. Some took their own lives. The criminal investigation into the scandal, which began in 2020, involving over 100 officers, is scaling up as the public inquiry phase comes to an end. And we understand now that corporate manslaughter considerations might be part of how the police take this forwards.
Who's zipping up operations in the UK?
Well, you know, in my many years in London, I've moved house more times than I care to consider.
Well, you need to pay the rent. I keep telling you, if you pay the rent, you wouldn't have this problem.
I'm just trying to keep ahead of them, moving from place to place. Zipcar was always a big part of my logistical operations, as I'm sure it was for plenty of people. But it's reached the end of the road in the UK. Its US owner has pulled the plug on its operations. And this is in the run-up to, they don't specifically cite this as justification, but it's not a massive stretch to consider London congestion charges coming in for electric vehicles. They concede that the price of electricity has hammered them somewhat in the UK. Yesterday, in a message to all customers, and I'm still on their mailing list, the Zipcar general manager said, "I'm writing to let you know that we are proposing to cease UK operations of Zipcar." And they started that consultation with around their 100 employees. Their losses, Nick, get this, rocketed to £11 million last year, compared to a loss of £360,000 the previous year. Their revenues have also slipped. They talk about cost pressures. They talk about, yes, fuel prices. Fuel prices are included in the rental agreement for these sort of hour-by-hour rentals. But electricity costs are the big one, and now congestion charges coming in for electric vehicles in London. So I can imagine that would be a bit of a hammer blow to their operations.
Now, I had you down for watching documentaries and Newsnight and possibly a bit of Traitors, but I didn't know you like Made in Chelsea, Christian. What's happening with someone called Candy Kittens?
Don't play dumb, Nick. You and I are forever sending each other clips of Made in Chelsea. A star of which, an early days star of which, Jamie Lang, went into the vegan sweet business and did very well out of it indeed. Candy Kittens, vegan, vegetarian, cat-shaped sweets. Right. Is this ringing a bell now?
Candy, yeah, I thought the person's name was Candy Kittens. Right, sorry.
No, keep up. He struck a deal to buy the snack brand Graze.
Got it now.
Yep. Graze is sort of healthy, nut-based snacks, etc. He's buying them from Unilever. Unilever paid about 150 million quid for this brand not long ago, and they're flogging it now to Jamie Lang for about 35 million quid. So they appear to be saying you're welcome to it, as Unilever rationalised their own product line. But the Candy Kitten company and the reality TV stars behind it say this is a great day, and this is how they're going to take on the likes of Unilever by snapping up these small challenger brands. Meanwhile, Unilever is beginning to look at its portfolio and see what else it might want to get rid of. So we'll see what else gets snapped up off the back of that.
Grazie for the great story, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM 738. We'll talk tomorrow. Tristan Southend, thank you for holding on the line. What cuts should be made to the welfare bill? Tristan, good morning.
Nick, good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all. Thank you for holding, sir.
I'm in receipt of PIP. I'm registered fully blind, and I have a completely untreatable form of epilepsy that hits me five times a week on average.
Goodness.
So the odds are against me, really, to be honest with you. But the first thing I'd like to say is something benefit claimants never do say, and that is to every taxpayer out there this morning who set their alarm clock and has got a full day's work ahead of them, thank you. Without you, I do not get to exist. So from the bottom of my heart, I thank you sincerely, and more people should say that and appreciate it. But when it comes to anxiety and that condition, how cruel and how heartless are we as a society to not expect people to work? You see, if they're in that situation, keeping them indoors all day staring at four walls is the most barbaric and cruel thing you can possibly do. Mm-hmm. Because it has the knock-on effect of them not cooking, which leads to things like diabetes and obesity. Mm-hmm. They get more depressed, which leads to even bigger problems, and then more associated problems on top of this. We must say to people with anxiety, your benefits are on condition that you attend social groups each week and build up your confidence.
Are you ready to see some, not on you, but as some form of crackdown on other recipients, Tristan?
Absolutely, and I think those with us with the higher need disabilities, as I like to consider myself, do want to see it as well, to be honest with you, because why should someone get the same money as me who is capable of doing a simple journey in 10 seconds flat?
Particularly as you're blind and you have epilepsy, you're exactly the sort of recipient it was invented for. Pursue, and it is not a way of life for you, it is a need. Tristan, thank you for holding. Have yourself a good day. We'll have more calls on that, but let's go to other matters. And, well, West Midlands police are still being questioned over their decision as regards the visiting fans, of course, from the Tel Aviv team coming up to Aston Villa, and there have been new developments. LBC's reporter Joseph Draper was watching a panel of MPs, the Home Affairs Committee, take more evidence yesterday and joins me now. What did you learn, Joseph? Morning.
Morning. Well, that's right. Yeah, this is a cross-party group of MPs quizzing at the police, really, on whether their intelligence was at all flawed, influenced by political pressure ahead of the Israeli team's match against Aston Villa in Birmingham last month. You'll remember, Nick, they advised that supporters of Maccabi Tel Aviv should be banned, describing them as high risk. And that was based on intelligence, which they say they received from Dutch police following unrest after a football match in Amsterdam last year between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Ajax. But since then, we've heard from Dutch police saying that that report was false, rejecting claims that 500 Maccabi fans were targeting Muslim communities, they were throwing some of the opposing supporters into a river. And the first witness yesterday was the government's independent advisor on anti-Semitism, Lord Mann. He's been doing his own research on what happened in Amsterdam, and he seemed pretty exasperated by the intelligence report, not least the claim that the last British team that they played was West Ham, when in fact the two teams have never played before.
There were no arrests for Maccabi Tel Aviv fans attacking local Dutch people. There is no evidence of any local people from the Netherlands having been injured. None.
There was also a really tense exchange between the MPs and the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, Craig Guildford, with the police chief repeatedly standing by his staff.
I wasn't there, you weren't there. I'm taking what I've been told very seriously from a professional.
They're one saying side, it didn't happen. They're saying it approach. Didn't happen. Are you saying they're now in denial? So that you're saying they didn't anticipate this, it happened, and now they're in denial. Is that what you're telling us?
I'm not saying that they're in denial, but you, with respect, you would have to ask them their version of events, wouldn't you? Not me.
And when asked why their account differed to Dutch authorities, Nick, the Assistant Chief Constable, Mike O'Hara, appeared to suggest it's because they changed their story when they came under political pressure.
I've since spoken to Peter Holler, the Gold Commander, and Sebastian Mayer from the Dutch police, and they are very clear they're under a lot of pressure, in their words, from City Hall. And it is very clear they seem rather apologetic to us as a force and are trying their best to provide something that is meaningful and helpful and accurate.
We also heard from Sarah Jones, policing minister. Now, you remember at the time, Nick, the Prime Minister criticised that ban at the time, calling it wrong. But yesterday, Sarah Jones struggled to answer when asked whether the Prime Minister's opinion was based on any evidence.
We neither had the risk assessment nor any intelligence. No. The decision sent a message which the Prime Minister could not accept.
I'm not sure, Nick, after that more than three-hour affair yesterday, that MPs are any closer, really, to understanding the truth of this. Those two police forces still very much at loggerheads about the origin of that intelligence assessment.
LBC's Joseph Draper reporting. Let's just take a quick dip into social media and texts that are coming in on our conversation about the welfare bill. Laura says, this is the truth. I work in housing. Having been in the police for 30 years, I see every day only a small amount of people are truly disabled. We ask the question, do you need employment coaching? And they just say, no, I'm fine, thanks. And they claim for everything. It's not fair. Liz says the benefits bill will only go up. A colleague has recently been assessed and been granted the cost of a taxi to and from work. In the last year, he's only been off sick for 2 days and had no issues getting the train to and from work. But some bright spark assessed him and thought he'd need a cab to get to work. Keep those calls coming. And coming up after the news...
Is it right, someone who steals an iPhone, is it right that that individual should be able to opt for a jury and therefore delay the rape, the murder, the more serious offence?
It's been around for centuries, but we have a Justice Secretary who, but for all the most grave cases such as rape, murder and manslaughter, wants to scrap jury trials, and he'll join us after this. 7:45 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Jury trials could be limited to the most serious offences as part of plans to clear the courts backlog in England and Wales. The Health Secretary says plans for another resident doctor's strike are a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas. And the Tories have renewed calls for Rachel Reeves to go following the resignation of the budget watchdog chief. LBC weather feeling colder with sunny spells for many. Some showers in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Surrey, there are severe delays on the M25 clockwise heading towards Junction 10 at the A3. It's because a car has broken down. There are delays back past Junction 9 at Leatherhead. Also on the M25, it remains very busy anti-clockwise from Junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12. And that was after that lorry broke down much earlier. It's been cleared for a while, but there are still delays. Also, delays continue in Chingford on Walthamstow Avenue going eastbound to Hall Lane. There's been an accident. And also delays of about 2 miles on the A20 westbound. This is heading up towards New Eltham because of the emergency works. On the trains, London North Western are running between Watford Junction and Snorbans Abbey.
LBC.
This festive season at McDonald's,
get rich deals every day.
Okay, okay.
With a sausage sandwich for just...
Let's see, net an MP.
Six chicken McNuggets for just...
Net an MP.
Fine. Get Grinch deals every day
in the McDonald's app.
18 plus app only. Ends 24th of December. One use per offer. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
They live in you.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination.
They live in me.
Be amazed. Be moved.
They're watching over.
Be there.
Everything we see.
For an experience that will stay with you forever.
In every creature.
Disney's The Lion King.
In star.
At London's Lyceum Theatre.
They live in you.
Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 7:49. Well, if perhaps the budget is now starting to move into history, one story that is very much going to emerge, and B, I sense a hot talking topic, is the idea of doing away with jury trials in all but the most severe cases, which means I can bring into the conversation the Justice Secretary, Deputy Prime Minister, and, of course, a voice well known to LBC. David Lammy joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Lammy. Good to see you. I know that you love playing quizzes, so I wonder if I could ask you the following. Who said this a few years ago? Jury trials are a fundamental part of our democratic settlement. Criminal trials without juries are a bad idea. Who said that?
I said that.
Ah! So what is your thinking now, Mr. Lammy?
They are a fundamental part of our system, Nick. And be reassured that later on today, when I'm in Parliament, I will absolutely underscore that. They are the cornerstone of our system. I'm very grateful to the 300,000 or so people every year that serve across the country in our juries. Any of us can, of course, get called up to serve in a jury. The question in front of us really relates to the backlog. If you are sadly raped in our country today, you will be waiting until 2028 or 2029 for that case to come on. We asked Sir Brian Leveson to look at this. In his report, he did suggest reform, including on juries. He also wanted to see investment and more sitting days across our system. We are doing that. He also wanted to see modernisation, and we are doing that. But it's important to emphasise 90% of cases in our country are dealt with by magistrates who can sentence up to a year in prison. There's then another 10%, of which 7% of that 10% people plead guilty in the Crown Court. That leaves 3%. And within that 3% are things like, if you today, Nick, went into Currys, you stole an iPhone, should you be able to opt for a jury? Or should that be dealt with by the magistrates or by a judge? That's the sort of question that I'm looking at. If you were arrested for possession of cannabis, should that be dealt with by a jury? Should you be able to opt for a jury? Or should that be dealt with by the magistrates or a judge? It's in that area that Brian is suggesting we need some reform so more cases are dealt with by magistrates where there is no backlog, and we are reserving cases of, he suggests, above 3 years for our Crown Court.
But you will be aware this has faced the most extraordinary backlash, with barristers, solicitors and other so-called legal experts, not universally, but by considerable number, vehement opposition to your scheme. Why are they wrong, Justice Secretary?
Well, there's been a lot of scaremongering.
Where's the scare there? It's true. This is your plan.
I'm making an announcement today in Parliament. There was a leak. That leak was revealing information, because in the end, as any cabinet secretary, you're talking to your colleagues about this. You're looking at data to inform your opinion. What I want to do is bring down the backlog. I want to bring it down and to see it reducing by the next general election. How do I do that? How do I reflect on what Brian's suggests? What's the balance across the system? Those are the judgments that I'm reaching. But I'm absolutely clear. Juries are important. They will always be important. The question is, could our magistrates do a bit more? Many of them believe they could do some more. We need to recruit more magistrates in order to do that. Those are the kind of fine judgments that I'm making.
So what cases can elect to go to jury trial, Secretary of State?
Well, in our system, You can elect if it's above...
But currently, under your review, how would it change, Mr. Lemmy?
Oh, well, look, there are anything up to 5 years you can elect. The individual can choose, I want a jury, I'm not sticking right. with the magistrates, I'm going to go for a jury. And look, by the way, we've seen a massive increase in the amount of people choosing to call to go for a jury. And some of those people, I don't suggest all, but some of those people are playing the system. They're doing that to spend more time on bail, effectively at home with their loved ones, rather than actually admit the crime that they've committed. And it is important that government reflects on that. By the way, Nick, you'll remember when under David Cameron, there used to be jury trials for defamation. They got away with that. Back in the 1930s, there were juries in civil cases. So there's always reform, and there's particularly a need for reform if it means that if you've experienced manslaughter, arson, and your house is burnt down, serious crimes, very serious crimes for you with serious consequences that could lead to serious time, we don't want those cases backed up in the system.
Okay. How will it speed up then? And what is the sort of number? I understand the backlog currently stands at approximately 80,000. If you are successful with this, what sort of yearly attrition rate would you be looking for?
Well, we've asked Sir Brian Leveson also to look at efficiencies across the system. That is, how are the courts working with the CPS, working with the police? Is there more to do to make sure that our 500 courtrooms are being properly used across the country, across our 84 courts? He's going to be reporting on that in the spring. When he does that, I'll have more to say, and I'll have an accurate estimation of where I think that we can get to. What I know is that if we do nothing, we'll be at 100,000 in 2028. I want to see the trend downward, and we're going to have to throw everything at this and support victims along the way, which is why I've announced 550 million for victims, if we want to see that number come down.
All right. You mentioned the number of courts and the number of courtrooms. There is a figure that there's about 20% of the so-called court estate that's not in use. 20%. Surely if that was in use, you'd start to clear the backlog without having to do away with juries.
Well, capacity across the system isn't just about juries. It's not just about judges. It's also about barristers. You might know, Nick, that if you're a young lawyer, you've just come out of law school, many young people are opting not to do criminal law. And that's why I'm announcing a new state-funded pupillage scheme. So we get those lawyers, so maybe we can fill those courts and have the system working more efficiently. So, yes, that's got to happen. But, yes, I think reform is necessary on the basis of what Sir Brian said. We've got to do all of it. There's no magic silver bullet.
Yeah, but if you're only using, say, 20%, if you're using 4 out of 5 courtrooms, if we use 5, imagine what that would achieve. Why don't we just use more of the courts?
But, Nick, to use the full capacity, it's a bit like an operating theatre. It's not just the consultant. It's all the things that have to work to make sure the operation can happen. And similarly, in our courts, yes, you need the courtroom, you need the prison system to be working efficiently, you need the police to be working efficiently, you need the prosecutors to be working efficiently, and you need the barristers.
Okay.
We've got to invest in all of it, and you know, I know that you know this, criminal justice is not an area that has commanded a lot of money or investment over the last 14 years, so we've got a lot to build on and to turn around, to turn the system around.
Why don't we have all courts sitting 7 days? Why don't we have courts sitting 7 days or at least 6, Secretary of State?
Well, again, you've got to have the capacity of barristers, of judges that can meet those 7 days. That you've got to have the ability to move people from prisons to those courts over the course of the weekend. The whole system would have to be reconfigured to make that happen. Well, so it sounds straightforward, but in practice, it's actually not quite as straightforward.
You talk about capacity. What about if... So we're going to have people rocketing through the courts at record speed. Have we got enough prison spaces?
Well, we've got a sentencing bill going through Parliament.
Well, we haven't, have we, Mr. Lammy?
No.
So they're going to race through the courts and then, right, guilty, you will go to jail for 2 years. Well, you won't actually have any spaces.
Well, we certainly inherited a massive prison crisis.
So you're rocketing them through, right? They're whizzing through like a Tottenham Hotspur left wing or whatever it might be. Guilty! Go to jail, Ferrari, for 2 years, but we haven't got anywhere to send you. What happens then?
Well, we're doing a lot to make sure that we have got the capacity, including building new prisons. I was up laying the foundation stone of one of them in Leicestershire just a few weeks ago. So, yes, we've got to build new prisons. We are building those prisons. They'll come on track. Well, I think we'll have an extra set of prison places by 2031, particularly, that makes sure that we've got that prison capacity.
Can we talk a little bit about prisons? You were indeed, you were up at that that site in Leicestershire. When did you last go to Wandsworth Jail? Because there have been some high-profile escapes from there lately.
Yes, and it is a couple of years since I've been to Wandsworth. I was speaking to the local MPs.
Shouldn't you have gone there as Secretary of State for Justice when you knew that it's leaking almost as much as this government with information, leaking like Thames water? Shouldn't you have gone there?
Well, the truth is that I've been to Belmarsh, I've been to Gartree, and over the course of many, many years, I've been to many prisons, including Wandsworth. There are issues at Wandsworth.
But you haven't been there for 2 years, Secretary of State.
That high-profile escape from Wandsworth. But the key thing is to invest in our prisons, invest in our
officers.
Shouldn't
you have gone and had a look for it yourself, Mr. Lammy?
Well, the truth is, across our prison estate, there remain significant issues. I'm afraid they're not just at Wandsworth. They're at Pentonville.
No, but there's been high profile at Wandsworth, isn't it? I would have thought as Justice Secretary, right, I better get myself down there and find out what's going on. No?
Well, the first thing I did as Justice Secretary was actually get to Belmarsh because in our high security estate, we've had prison officers attacked.
Right.
And I was announcing more kit for our prison officers, tasers, armed vests to keep them secure.
Well,
so there are big issues across the prison estate, Nick. You know that.
Mm.
A lot of them have to be attended to. We're getting on with that, but it's a mountain to climb.
Last minute or so together, how many offenders are currently at large, do you know? Do you have the number?
Two.
What are the circumstances?
I can't tell you the circumstances.
Where are we going to find them? I want to help you find them. I want to be able to put out their descriptions now, live on LBC. You know how LBC works. I don't need to remind you of the heft of this great organisation, Mr. Lammy.
Just so I can give you the facts, we've got a paper-based system, as you know.
Yes.
We need to move to a digital system. I've asked Dame Lynn Owens to look at this and make some recommendations. I've put in a new digital crack team to help our prisons. There's been a bit of a misjoin between our courts and our prisons. I put in a new query unit. The numbers are too high. There has been a spike. I'm pleased that there looks like there's a downward trend this year.
But how long have these two been on the lam, Mr.
that
Lammy? How long have these two been on the lammy?
It's not an issue.
Well, it is. I mean, are they from Wandsworth?
There are two in the
system. Oh, please, God, you know which jail they're from.
But, Nick, because actually this is a policing issue, and we do ask our police to then do the work to find these individuals, sometimes for operation reasons, they actually don't want us to reveal
them. All right, if you can't tell me, you can't tell me.
Yeah, yeah.
Lastly, you will remember the case of Hadish Kabatu. He was the Ethiopian down at Epping, who was, of course, convicted of sexual crimes and then went on. His family is still saying they've not had an apology from you. Are you aware they request an apology?
Of course, said I'm sorry in Parliament. I think I said that twice in relation to their
experience.
But why
no note?
They are meeting with the prisons minister. I intend to be there at that meeting. I hope it's been scheduled because, of course, any victim of crime who then finds out that the prisoner has been wrongly released should not be put through that trauma. And of course, I apologise and I am sorry.
And you'll make it, providing something else doesn't come in your diary, you will attempt to get them face to face.
Absolutely. Okay. It's my intention to meet them.
Thanks for running through all the details. We'll carry on that conversation. David Lammy, Justice Secretary, Deputy Prime Minister, appearing here on LBC, taking us to 2 minutes after eight. Let's get the headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, has told Nick that jury trials will remain a cornerstone of the court system. They're expected to be limited to more serious cases, such as rape and murder, as part of reforms in England and Wales. The record high backlog of Crown Court cases stands at nearly 80,000. Mr. Lammy says he wants to see more defendants dealt with by magistrates.
Back in the 1930s, there were juries in civil cases. So there's always reform, and there's particularly a need for reform if it means that if you've experienced manslaughter, arson, and your house is burnt down, serious crimes, very serious crimes for you with serious consequences that could lead to serious time, we don't want those cases backed up in the system.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says plans for another resident doctors' strike in England is a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas. Members of the British Medical Association are planning to walk out for 5 days from December the 17th. It's part of their ongoing row over pay and jobs. Former NHS Trust Chairman Roy Lilly has told LBC that further negotiations are now essential.
To be honest, it doesn't really matter at the, you know, whether they're right or wrong. At the end of the day, Streeting's got to find a way of resolving it. And you can't do that by, you know, trying to be Steve Barclay, his Tory predecessor, who was, you know, really tough on the BMA, and Streeting, who criticised him for doing it, now in office, is doing exactly the same thing.
The Conservatives have accused Rachel Reeves of using the head of the budget watchdog as a human shield. Richard Hughes stepped down from the OBI yesterday following an inquiry into the early publication of its official forecast. It follows a row about the Chancellor's handling of the run-up to last week's economic statement. A long-awaited report into the actions of the police during the Hillsborough disaster will be published later. The inquiry by the Independent Office for Police Conduct has focused on amendments to officers' accounts and information passed to the media. The disaster in 1989 led to the deaths of 97 Liverpool fans. And a method that uses low-energy X-rays to treat rectal cancer has been given the green light for use on the NHS in England. The treatment, known as Papillon, uses radiation against tumours as an alternative to surgery. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 97.02. It closed down 17 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather feeling cooler this morning with sunny spells for many later on. Scattered showers then developing in southern and western areas. A high of 11 degrees from Global's newsroom for LBC. I'm Thomas Watts.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
It's 6 minutes after eight, a little bit delayed after that extended interview with David Lammy. 6 minutes after eight on Tuesday, the 2nd of December. And after a headline I've said many, many times, it does appear to be true. The jury is out and you've heard all the details, and we'll come to your reaction in that extended conversation with David Lammy. Staying with other governmental matters, yet more industrial action from our resident doctors. They've had a hefty pay rise, but their other gripe is the fact that there's not many jobs out there. Speaking with me last month, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, actually directly addressed one doctor who said he was thinking of going on strike.
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so, having had a 28.9% pay rise.
The research that shows that children as young as three are regularly using social media. Parents, have you ever heard of a thing called a book? In other news,
the tobacco-stained streets of this London borough cost tens of thousands of pounds a year to clean up and are caused by the spitting out of a stimulant called Parn. I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Wembley.
Parn? I hadn't really heard of it before, but we'll give you a full report on that. And then, towards the end of the show, Cleese will be joining us for the new book, 40 Towers, Faults and All, My Favourite Moments. John with us in the next hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It is, to support Mr. Lammy's position, it is wrong that someone who is the victim of crime, perhaps a sexual crime today, might wait until 2028 for justice. That is totally wrong for that woman or that man, whoever it might be. It's also quite helpful for someone who commits fairly serious crime, steals from a store, to try and delay that until 2028, because obviously memories dim, of course they do. And a skilled barrister is going to say, you said that my client was wearing a white T-shirt. But here's a photograph at the time. It's clearly a black T-shirt. How can we possibly believe a word you say to chortling in court? I get it. I get it. I get it. But to me, it's also wrong that we're doing away with something that stood us pretty proud since the days of Magna Carta. Yes, jury trial. Your views in just a moment, and those of the co-founder of Confluence Crisis Management Services and a retired lawyer will know far better than I. But let's just listen back to a little of what the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, told us within the last 20 minutes or so about these proposed changes. I know that you love playing quizzes, so I wonder if I could ask you the following. Who said this a few years ago? Jury trials are a fundamental part of our democratic settlement. Criminal trials without juries are a bad idea. Who said that?
I said that.
Ah, so what is your thinking now, Mr. Lammy?
They are a fundamental part of our system, Nick, and be reassured that later on today when I'm in Parliament, I will absolutely underscore that. They are the cornerstone of our system. I'm very grateful to the 300,000 or so people every year that serve across the country in our juries. Any of us can, of course, get called up to serve in a jury. The question in front of us really relates to the backlog. If you are sadly raped in our country today, you will be waiting until 2028 or 2029 for that case to come on. We asked Sir Brian Leveson to look at this. In his report, he did suggest reform, including on juries. He also wanted to see investment and more sitting days across our system. We are doing that. He also wanted to see modernisation, and we are doing that. But it's important to emphasise 90% of cases in our country are dealt with by magistrates who can sentence up to a year in prison. There's then another 10%, of which 7% of that 10%, people plead guilty in the Crown Court. That leaves 3%. And within that 3% are things like, if you today, Nick, went into Curry's, you stole an iPhone, should you be able to opt for a jury? Or should that be dealt with by the magistrates or by a judge? That's the sort of question that I'm looking at. If you were arrested for possession of cannabis, should that be dealt with by a jury? Should you be able to opt for a jury? Or should that be dealt with by the magistrates or a judge? It's in that area that Brian is suggesting we need some reform so more cases are dealt with by magistrates where there is no backlog, and we are reserving cases of, he suggests, above 3 years for our Crown Court.
But you will be aware this has faced the most extraordinary backlash, with barristers, solicitors and other so-called legal experts, not universally, but by considerable number, vehement opposition to your scheme. Why are they wrong, Justice Secretary?
Well, there's been a lot of scaremongering.
Where's the scare there? It's true. This is your plan.
I'm making an announcement today in Parliament. There was a leak. That leak was revealing information, because in the end, as any cabinet secretary, you're talking to your colleagues about this, you're looking at data to inform your opinion. What I want to do is bring down the backlog. I want to bring it down and to see it reducing by the next general election. How do I do that? How do I reflect on what Brian's suggests? What's the balance across the system? Those are the judgments that I'm reaching, but I'm absolutely clear. Juries are important. They will always be important. The question is, could our magistrates do a bit more? Many of them believe they could do some more. We need to recruit more magistrates in order to do that. Those are the kind of fine judgments that I'm making.
So what cases can elect to go to jury trial, Secretary of State?
Well, in our system, You can elect if it's above...
But currently, under your review, how would it change, Mr. Lammy?
Oh, well, look, there are anything up to 5 years you can elect. The individual can choose... I want a jury. I'm not sticking with the magistrates. I'm going to go for a jury. And look, by the way, we've seen a massive increase in the amount of people choosing to call to go for a jury. And some of those people, I don't suggest all, but some of those people are playing the system. They're doing that to spend more time on bail, effectively at home with their loved ones, rather than actually admit the crime that they've committed. And it is important that government reflects on that. By the way, Nick, you'll remember when under David Cameron, there used to be jury trials for defamation. They got away with that. Back in the 1930s, there were juries in civil cases. So there's always reform, and there's particularly a need for reform if it means that if you've experienced manslaughter, arson, and your house is burnt down, serious crimes, very serious crimes for you with serious consequences that could lead to serious time, we don't want those cases backed up in the system.
Okay. How will it speed up then? And what is the sort of number? I understand the backlog currently stands at approximately 80,000. If you are successful with this, what sort of yearly attrition rate would you be looking for?
Well, we've asked Sir Brian Leveson also to look at efficiencies across the system. That is, how are the courts working with the CPS, working with the police? Is there more to do to make sure that our 500 courtrooms are being properly used across the country, across our 84 courts? He's going to be reporting on that in the spring. When he does that, I'll have more to say, and I'll have an accurate estimation of where I think that we can get to. What I know is that if we do nothing, we'll be at 100,000 in 2028. I want to see the trend downward, and we're going to have to throw everything at this and support victims along the way, which is why I've announced 550 million for victims, if we want to see that number come down.
All right. You mentioned the number of courts and the number of courtrooms. There is a figure that there's about 20% of the so-called court estate that's not in use. 20%. Surely if that was in use, you'd start to clear the backlog without having to do away with juries.
Well, capacity across the system isn't just about juries. It's not just about judges. It's also about barristers. You might know, Nick, that if you're a young lawyer, you've just come out of law school, many young people are opting not to do criminal law. And that's why I'm announcing a new state-funded pupillage scheme. So we get those lawyers, so maybe we can fill those courts and have the system working more efficiently. So yes, that's got to happen. But yes, I think reform is necessary on the basis of what Sir Brian said. We've got to do all of it. There's no magic silver bullet.
Yeah, but if you're only using, say, 20%, if you're using 4 out of 5 courtrooms, if we use 5, imagine what that would achieve. Why don't we just use more of the courts?
But, Nick, to use the full capacity, it's a bit like an operating theatre. It's not just the consultant. It's all the things that have to work to make sure the operation can happen. And similarly, in our courts, yes, you need the courtroom, you need the prison system to be working efficiently, you need the police to be working efficiently, you need the prosecutors to be working efficiently, and you need the barristers.
Okay.
We've got to invest in all of it, and you know, I know that you know this, criminal justice is not an area that has commanded a lot of money or investment over the last 14 years, so we've got a lot to build on and to turn around, to turn the system around.
David Lammy, come to your reactions and those of retired lawyer Red Seeger, the other side of the 8:16 LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
Jury trials could be limited to more serious offences as part of plans to clear the court's backlog in England and Wales. The Health Secretary's accused resident doctors of seeking to wreck Christmas with their latest strike, and the Tories have renewed calls for Rachel Reeves to go following the resignation of the budget watchdog chief. LBC weather feeling colder this morning with sunny spells for many, some scattered showers in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from before Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3. And that was after that car broke down earlier. Also very slow on the A13 westbound from the Wennington Interchange to the North Circular Road. Now, much earlier on, there was an accident. Everything's been open for a while, but those delays just not wanting to recover. In Chingford, there are queues on Walthamstow Avenue going eastbound to Hall Lane, and that's following an accident. Now, on the trains, Thameslink services are delayed to and from St Pancras. There are for delays of about half an hour across most of their network. Also, the delays continue for London North Western. No services between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey because of problems with the overhead wires.
LBC.
Roll up, it's time for the raffle.
Oh, everything costs a fortune these days. Even my mobile bill.
Well, yeah, you're with a big mobile network. I'm with Lebara. Their prices haven't gone up since 2020, and they're rated 5 stars on Trustpilot.
5 stars? For customer service?
Yep. Real people on the phone every day from 7am to 11pm.
And the winning number is 10!
No, from £5 a month.
Lebara, the smarter mobile network.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's a massive shake-up to our legal system, but will it work? Rad Seeger is a retired lawyer, co-founder of Confluence Crisis Management Services, acted for some families in some high-profile cases, not least Harry Dunn, of course following the case with that American citizen, Anne Sokoulis, and also the family of Sir David Amos, the Conservative MP who was fatally stabbed some years ago. Rad Seeger joins me now. What's the impact going to be of this, Rad? Morning.
Nick, good morning. I suppose none of us really know until we try it. But I guess I'm a pragmatist, and I spend a lot of time with victims. You know, when you tell a victim you're going to have to wait 5 or 6 years to get your case to court, you can understand they lose the will. Of course, none of us want to do anything to undermine a defendant's right to a fair trial. It's absolutely fundamental to our system, but we have to deal with in front of our nose. And, you know, we've got tens of thousands of cases stuck in the system, and the policymakers think it's a way forward, and I'm all for giving it a go.
Shouldn't we also be looking at the fact that only 4 out of 5 courts are in use at the moment, and we only sit 5 days, and you'll know better than I. Often, on a Friday, we try and find an excuse to all go home at about 3.
Yeah, exactly. Look, this is not going to be the silver bullet. You know, Nick, as well as I do, the justice system has been underfunded for decades, and I'm afraid we're all paying the price for that. We'd rather spend money on our health and our defense, but we tend not to spend money on courts and prisons. And we are where we are, Nick. The question is, what do we do about it now? And I'm sure people in the MOJ are looking at, you know, all the possibilities, and this is just a part of it.
Lastly, how important a safety check can a jury be in certain cases, would you say, Rad?
Look, there are plenty of systems around the world that have never had a jury trial. Countries like Germany, Canada, countries that we would say are safe. I personally believe that I would want to be tried by my peers. And, you know, we have to, you know, we just have to trust that those people who are making these policies know what they're doing. I'm all for giving it a go, as I say.
Rad Seeger, thank you. You're a retired lawyer, co-founder of Confluence Crisis Management Services. Luke, you'll be the first caller. Let me just read a little bit of social media that's coming in. Vanessa says, I've been a juror a few times. It's such a waste of taxpayers' money. Most other jurors are either unemployed, couldn't speak English well, or a lot of liberal-thinking teachers on school holidays. Consequently, no one was ever found guilty, even on one occasion when we had DNA evidence and a female vicar as a witness. Plus, there's a lot of bullying, trying to speed up getting out of a jury room as soon as possible. Same subject, this comes in from France. What's the point of speeding up courts without sorting prison spaces first? Well, in fact, friends, you might have heard I put that question directly to in the Justice Secretary, and he says that they are building more prisons, but they're not available now. Rob in Tottenham, which, of course, is Mr. Lammy's constituency. In the example of the iPhone thief David Lammy cites, surely the same evidence will be put before a magistrate or a judge who can make a decision on the case. Rape, murder, manslaughter cases would always go before a jury. Luke's in Albrighton. Luke, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. Slight cough, but it was getting rid of it. Hey, what's the impact of this going to be, do you think? Positive or negative?
I think it's going to be overly negative, to be honest with you. Listening to Mr. Lammy this morning say that magistrates can do more. I'm a magistrate currently. We sit for free. We look at mostly minor offences. The system for the magistrates is stretched as it is. If we want to add more trials onto that, it's not going to work. They don't take into account the legal advisers and how little they're paid and how much they work. And I think it's a necessary safeguard to have jury trials as an option, especially in cases where opinion of ministers is made so public and it can adversely affect people's judgments.
What are the strains that are making it move so slowly, would you say, Luke? You'll see it up front and close and personal.
There's a huge amount of cases coming through. The courts aren't 100% manned. The legal assistants that we have in the magistrates' courts, they are qualified lawyers and they aren't necessarily paid as much as they would be if they were practicing law, yet their workload is massive. So to throw more work at them, the system's going to be under more strain than it already is.
And speaking as a magistrate, the biggest frustration that you encounter?
The biggest frustration I encounter is if we try to use community punishments rather than putting people in prison. The probation service isn't there or isn't functioning well enough to make those community services effective. If you have a drug addict or an alcoholic, which is more than likely in a case that for shoplifting, and you want to impose a community sentence, if you try and give them unpaid work to keep them busy and rehabilitate them, the probation service won't facilitate that because of their addiction.
Luke, I will leave it there. Thanks for the work you do. Thanks for your input. Only finishing to get more folk involved. 8:25. Sid in Bradford. Sid, your view of this, if it goes ahead. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, do you think it should go ahead?
No, it shouldn't, because how is somebody supposed to get a fair trial or, you know, a judge might, you know, magistrate might just, you know, not like somebody for whatever reason and not have the, you know, understanding of what should be?
Well, you and I know that, Sid, although probably in the case of a judge or a district recorder, unlikely. But I think you're right, a magistrate can just take an instant dislike to someone and then, well, they're in a world of pain, aren't they?
Well, exactly. And then on top of that, then you're going to run through a massive number of appeals that are going to be coming off the back of it. So you won't have time for appeals.
Lastly, I hear you, and I'm pretty much in agreement with you, but it is not right that someone who perhaps is a victim of a sexual crime today, her case would, or his, their case would not be heard until 2028. That doesn't work either, does it, Sid?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But what they should do then is prioritise, you know, the crimes like that, to jump the queue and come forward. Because how many rape cases do we have in a year in the UK? So you should just bring them forward regardless.
Then smaller cases will never get dealt with. Like the theft of an iPhone from a store or whatever.
Well, theft from an iPhone from a store, the laws have been there for a long time. And to be fair, locking somebody up for an iPhone, it should be more investment into rehabilitating them within the community.
Sid, thank you. Matt in Wakefield. Matt, your view if this were to go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. First time caller and a big fan of your show.
Thank you so much.
I just caught that, so I'm not sure if I got the right end of the stick. But it sounded to me like David Lammy was suggesting that there were cases where people who were charged with possession of cannabis and low level thefts were electing for trial by jury, and
yes,
that was part of the reason.
Yes.
I mean, I work in support services and in and around the criminal justice system. And I can tell you now that we already have a system in place in our judicial system, and that is in relation to summary offences and offences that are trialable either way. And I can tell you now that a simple possession of cannabis or a theft would be a summary only offence, and that person would be precluded from electing to go for trial by jury. And the fact that David Lammy is a justice secretary doesn't understand that fundamental principle within our justice system is quite worrying, to be honest.
How much of a backward step is this in your view, Matt?
I think it's a huge backward step. I don't think there's any issue with convening jury trials or anything like that. I think it's the system itself that is fundamentally flawed. And I think, you know, we've had trial by jury in this country for 1,000 years, probably more, and it's a fundamental principle of our judicial system. And I think there's too much room for error if we kind of erode that. And I think, you know, just take some of the examples at the moment, you know, offences against freedom of speech, etc. I think if some of those types of offences were to come before judges, especially if there is, you know, kind of political interference, yep. I think this is just too much of a risk. And I think what we've got has worked for a long, long time. I don't think there's any need to change it. I think what needs to change is the system itself.
Matt, you make a good point. Toby Young, Lord Young of the Free Speech Union, indeed founder of the Free Speech Union, says speech-related cases, jury acquittals, 27.6%, let's call it 28%, 16% at magistrates, 28 place 16 in just the sort of cases that you were referencing. Matt, thank you. Paul in Gibraltar. Paul, forward or backward step? Which is it?
Backward.
Why, sir?
If I found myself in the unfortunate position of possibly going to prison for 2 or 3 years... I'd want to go to a jury.
Take your chances, you mean?
Sorry?
And take your chances.
Yeah, would a judge... I feel that judges and magistrates are predisposed to believe in the police. And when the police are telling...
I don't know. I mean, I've sat in a lot of trials... by the way, this is a reporter. Sometimes yes, not always, Paul, I think is a fair summation of that, really.
Well, when the police are presenting evidence like West Ham playing Maccabi Haifa...
Yes. And it never happened.
Yeah, it was a figment of their AI search or something.
That's right. This was to try and justify the decision not to allow fans to go up to Villa Park to watch the Aston Villa game. That we covered this in the first hour. Paul, well remembered. The clock's against us. Have a safe day in Jib, and I hope we will talk again soon. Coming up later in the show, yet more industrial action by those doctors just before Christmas. Dr. Thomas Cheliotis-James is with the BMA.
I would hope that we can come up with a deal as soon as possible. We have put several offers on the table, several proposals that we feel would be acceptable.
And that's in the next hour. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, on LBC News Time. Then, Thomas Watts.
The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, has told Nick that juries will remain a fundamental part of the court system. Some defendants could be prevented from opting for a jury trial as part of efforts to tackle the backlog in England and Wales. Health experts expect pressure on services will be intense during the latest strike by resident doctors in England. The BMA has announced a 5-day walkout from December the 17th in the dispute over jobs and pay. A long-awaited report into the Hillsborough disaster will be published at lunchtime. The IOPC watchdog has spent 13 years investigating the actions of police officers in April 1989. LBC weather, feeling colder with sunny spells for many today. Scattered showers developing in the south and west. High of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
There have been calls for Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, to resign. Some have even said she should be put in prison. Today, Keir Starmer has tried to turn the corner on last week's budget. But is it going to work? And are we all losing our collective minds about what the government is doing?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Kev, it's Black Friday madness. Customers, calls, emails.
Then you need something built for busy, like iPhone 17. And right now, you can save £144 on a 36-month plan in EE's Black Friday sale. iPhone 17, a delight at work, even when your coffee's gone cold.
Nice one, Kev. Have a fresh hot coffee on me.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE, better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT. Ends 4th December. Terms apply.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to Jurors in a Minute or Three. The time is 8.33, and to a story now about how a chewing substance is proving a real palm to keeping the streets clean in a particular London borough. LBC's reporter Henry Riley has been to investigate and joins us from... Henry, where are you? Good morning.
Near Wembley. Good morning, Nick. You don't have to look very hard or far in this northwest London borough before you find huge rust-coloured spots blighting pavements on street corners by buildings, telephone boxes, and even flower beds. Now, these are sort of reddish-brown coverings that have been confusing some residents for years, but really angering Brent Council, who shelled out £30,000 last year alone to clean the streets. And the cause has been identified as people spitting out a stimulant called Parn. Now, Parn is a mix of betel nut, tobacco and spices wrapped in a leaf and then chewed. Now, it's a practice that's been used for thousands of years by some communities as either a sort of palate cleanser or breath freshener, but can cause serious health issues or indeed unsightly staining, as we are seeing here. Councillor Krupa Sheath is the local authority's cabinet member for public realm and enforcement. She tells me it's filthy and shouldn't be for sale on UK high streets.
In Brent, we enforce against actions, not communities. If you need help, we have great services to help people quit. But no one gets a free pass to wreck public spaces that belong to us all. Parn chewing and spitting cost this council over £30,000 a year. That's money that should go into libraries and leisure centres, not scrubbing pavements. So if you're caught, you will be fined.
Now, the practice originates from Southeast Asia, and public health experts say gives the user a stimulant or narcotic effect, and obviously leaves these stains because when it's mixed with saliva and spat out, it does cause this sort of bright... Indeed, dark red colour. Now, the Labour-run council was struggling to remove the marks, even with high-powered jet cleans. They have managed to do so now, but it is a very costly process. These people on Ealing Road in Wembley have given me their thoughts. How often do you see the palm, the marks on the trees and everything?
Every day. Even if you stay here 5-10 minutes, you will see again. You will see again. Every 5-10 minutes, you will see.
And what do you think the council should do?
Council should first thing they pick up the bloody shop and charge them extra money. Because that stuff is coming from India. It doesn't grow in this country.
Have you seen much of it, the spitting?
Yes, it's not good for other people, isn't it?
What do you think should happen? Because the council's spending a lot of money cleaning it up.
They're not spending lots of money because sometimes it's not clean. But today it's clean. I don't know how it is.
You live nearby. How much do you see this?
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. People are there, grounded there. They don't care about other people. They split everywhere. They don't look at other people as well.
Now, there are banners and signs up in the area in both English and Gujarati as part of a campaign launched by the council against the practice. Paan does have serious health risks. It's been linked to cancer, gum disease, and can be even linked to tuberculosis. Brent Council, Nick, say that enforcement officers are on patrol and that perpetrators can be fined up to £100.
He's on his way to Wembley. LBC's Henry Riley reporting. If you've ever used Paan, again, a rust-coloured mix of saliva and Paan blighting the streets. Paan is a mix of betel nut, is that? Tobacco and spices wrapped in a leaf, used for centuries as a palate cleanser or a breath freshener. If you've used it, do let me know. I suppose it's a bit like asking how cigarettes work, I suppose. It becomes kind of relaxant in some fashion. Right, let's come back to your calls, Joe, in just a moment. Natalie in Berkshire, we often go to the Old Bailey to view cases. My niece wants to be a barrister. From July to September, the court practically closes down due to school holidays. Check the court data. It's unreal. Simple solution. Don't take 6 weeks off with your kids. Ray's in Walton-on-Thames. Ray, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning to you. Good morning. Some years ago, I was a juror on a jury in a local county court, and we didn't start until 10 in the morning. we arrived about 9:30. They called us into the room. 10 o'clock, the court filled up. 12 o'clock, we broke for lunch. And 2 hours lunch, called us back at 2 o'clock,
yeah.
and by 4 we were sent on our way. And this happened every day.
I mean, this is the reality, isn't it? I'm not saying there aren't pressures, but if we actually made the existing court system work a little bit harder, we would soon start cutting through some of this.
Absolutely. I mean, my day job used to be sort of 7:30 in the morning until 5.
Mm.
And sometimes on a Saturday. So I just don't see why they just put the hours in and get the queues down.
Lastly, what's your abiding memory of having done jury service?
My abiding memory was the person we found guilty was, to me, obviously, there are 12 of us, was so obviously guilty from the start. And it was persuading several of the people that she was as white as white and as pure as the day.
How long did deliberations go on for?
About 3 hours,
right.
Something like that, 3 hours at the end of the week.
But eventually got there.
We got there in the end, yes. It was a pub fight. A few drinks were involved.
Did you have breathers?
Imagine. Afterwards, when we found a guilty, they read out a whole string of GBH, ABH, going equipped.
Going equipped, right.
Yeah,
and that's when you can look at the jurors that you had to nudge over the line. You just sort of wink at them and say, told you, there you go, that's what we did.
Exactly.
I know. I've sat in enough courtrooms to watch that process many, many years ago as a reporter. Ray, thank you. Coming up on 8:40, Joe's in Croydon. Joe, forward step, backward step, what is it to you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Big fan, Dominus Antikythera, but yeah, I love your work.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Yes.
Personally, I think that if it does do what it's expected to do, which is to reduce the amount of time it takes people to come to court, then, yeah, it's got to be something which we put in place. People got to remember, you can complain about it, but we've got somebody who could be a potential predator out there.
Predator, right, yeah.
5 years additional for them to come to court. They could reenact, they could redo, they could reoffend. I mean, there's lots of things which could happen between them getting to court.
But you could convict an innocent person, of course.
There is that potential, and I'm hoping that any system which we implement will be reviewed again and again to make sure that the chances of that is minimised. But to get these kind of people off the streets, I mean, that to be our priority. We can't have...
But what about... I agree, but what about what Ray just said, which is they rock up at 10, they have a two-hour lunch and they leave at 4, and let's face it, we know that they only work 5 days a week anyway. We should go to 6 days a week and full days, surely. Isn't that the way through?
Nick, inefficiencies in the public sector, we could have a whole different discussion about that. We could be here for hours and hours. But frankly, yeah, we know that the public sector in our country is not, it just doesn't work. Yes, we could do a lot better. We could do a lot better with regard to our courts. We could do a lot better in every field of our public sector. And so I agree with him. Yeah, if we could get that to be more efficient, yeah, we could probably start reducing numbers. But anything which gets these kind of people to trial quicker has to be something that we consider seriously.
All right. Joe, full support from you. Thank you. We also, of course, could talk a little bit about the substance Paan after Henry Riley's report from the London Borough, where they are spending tens of thousands to clean up the streets.
Sushil is in Wembley. Sushil, right. You see Henry, say hi. What's your view on this story? Have you seen this pan then and the stains that it's left? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. I have been staying here in this area for the last 18 years, and I've seen this menace going from bad to worse, unfortunately. So this is an absolute blight on the beautiful area, basically. So, yeah.
In the 17 years, has it got a lot worse in recent times? How would you describe it?
Yeah. It's gone from bad to worse, as I said, especially in the last 5 to 7, maybe 8 years or something like that.
Okay. Who is doing it, typically?
I don't know. It's just the people who stay, who hang around, who have that pond, as you, as was described as why, what it does. And normally when you eat it, and obviously I used to eat it as well.
Oh, you did? But, I was going to ask you. Know. Right, okay. Why did you use it?
So it's not necessarily it has to have tobacco. You can choose a non-tobacco version as well. And then what happens is when you eat it, like with saliva, then there's this liquid that is formed in your mouth. So sometimes you can take it in or sometimes you can spit it. So back in India, what they do is they'll provide you with buckets of mud or sand, and then you can spit it in the in those buckets. So that way then you don't spit it on the roads.
Where are those buckets? They're on street corners, are they, in India?
Yeah, street corners or the shop owners will provide that as well, so that you can just spit it in that in that bucket. So it's kind of a responsibility of the shop provider as well, to some extent.
And you see the stains, lastly, Sushil, in Wembley?
Sorry?
You see the stains in Wembley now that they're trying to clean up. It is a major problem up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially the junction of Ealing Road and High Road, you know, so that is a hot spot.
Sushil, thank you. I'm someone who's obviously used it and seen how it's treated or how it's dealt with, is probably a better word, in India. Come back to jury trials. Nick's in Holland Park. Should they be suspended for all but most grave cases or the one with the longer terms? Good morning.
Good morning. I've been on a jury. They're all absolutely useless. I mean, not only is the cross-section, if you took an absolute cross-section of the British public, totally unable and unqualified to be jurors, it's even worse than that because lots of normal people are exempted. Armed forces, judiciary, police, and anyone that runs a business, anyone that has a serious job can be exempt. Anyway, so I would not have any jury at all, and I was just telling your researcher, I think the answer is no judges, no magistrates, no jury, the whole lot done by AI will be the only thing that will be it will be the only thing that will be entirely dispassionate, 24/7, no 2-hour lunch breaks at the Garrick Club or wherever the judges go, easy job done. You know, you feed in case law, you feed in all the evidence, and computer,
and it allowance whatsoever for human behaviour. It has no way of dealing with that. And how many examples of botched AI do I have to point you to?
AI? Say again?
How many botched examples of the implementation of AI do I need to point you to?
How many botched examples of juries and judges and magistrates do we have?
But those are real people. Those are judged by your peers, not judged by a computer.
It's okay being judged by, well, either in the case of juries, magistrates and judges.
I'll take my chances with 12 people from Greenwich High Street than I will from AI, for goodness sake.
Of course you will, because they're more likely to find you not guilty.
Well, let's see what others make of it. I might even look up some examples of a bad implementation of AI and remind people the other side of the news. But we have to get to the news. Nick, thank you. Let's see what others make of this. Coming up after the news, the NHS nurse who addressed a transgender paedophile as Mr. has been suspended and is left in legal limbo as the government continues to delay publishing Equalities guidance. I'll tell you the extraordinary story, how the nurse, who was also called the N-word 3 times and physically attacked, she's the one who's been suspended. More on that after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The use of jury trials could be scaled back as part of efforts to tackle the court's backlog in England and Wales. The Health Secretary says a plan for another resident doctor's strike in England is a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas. And Donald Trump's special envoy is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow. LBC weather, feeling colder today with sunny spells for many, but showers in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise. There are delays of about 45 minutes to junction 10 at the A3. It's because a car broke down earlier on the Surrey stretch. It has been recovered. It's been recovered for a while, but it's still very slow. And then on the Essex stretch of the M25, there are lengthy delays anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to the Holmesdale Tunnel, which is the tunnel just before junction 25 at the A10 following an accident. Severe delays continue on the A20 westbound to New Eltham because of the emergency repair works, where one lane is closed. On the trains, London Northwestern are running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. Thames Link services are delayed now by about 40 minutes across their entire network.
This is LBC.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel. Let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit Indeed.com/try today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Vodafone, you can save up to £1,032 with the Samsung Galaxy S25 FE when you trade in an eligible phone. And keep you and your family connected this Christmas. Hurry! Offer ends the 17th of December. So, go online or in-store today. Vodafone.
Save £576 on 5GB airtime over 36 months. £144 on phone and £312 with trade-in. Phone cost is £534. Credit and trade-in checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at ThamesLinkRailway.com. Terms apply.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We're talking jury trials. Megan says, I'm on my second week of jury service. I spent all of last week coming into court without being assigned a trial. We talk about poor productivity in Britain. Here, the state has compelled me to spend a week watching terrible daytime TV instead of working. Gordon's responded to Nick's idea of AI justice. Now we have some really unhinged ideas. Gabby says, people don't understand AI, it's problematical. You can feed in the same data 10 times and get 10 different results. I wouldn't take my chances right now. Maybe over time, if safeguards were built in. And as one of my colleagues just pointed out, of course, the panel of MPs taking evidence about West Midlands police decision not to allow fans to travel, ask fans not to travel to that Maccabi Tel Aviv game. One of the reasons was that they had already caused violence when they played West Ham United. That was taken from AI. Maccabi Tel Aviv have never played West Ham United. So, Nick, to your idea that it's the perfect way to deal with trials, I think possibly that might need its own review. And we'll come back to that conversation in a moment. But to other matters, let's tell you the story about a 40-year-old nurse, Jennifer Mell, if I'm saying that correctly. She worked at St Helier Hospital in Carshalton in Surrey, and she was discussing using a catheter for a patient, a paedophile, who was a serving inmate from a high-security men's prison and was also transgender. The patient took issue with her using the male pronoun and title. The nurse replied that she was sorry, I cannot refer to you as her or she. It's against my faith and Christian values, but I'll call you by your name. The patient then subjected her to a racially and religiously aggravated assault, lunged at her, and used the N-word three times. The nurse was investigated and disciplined by the hospital. She spoke earlier this year about her ordeal.
In the beginning, I was quite very traumatized and was quite fearful. The thought of losing my job, my entire career, it did affect my mental health. And each time I thought about it, I would just begin to cry.
A spokesman for Epsom and St Helier University Hospital's NH Trust says, we expect all members of staff to follow professional standards, such as the Nursing and Midwifery Council's Code of Conduct. So you have a patient who lunges, who is, by the way, a paedophile, who lunges at a nurse and uses the N-word three times, and it's the nurse who gets suspended. Is it me, or have we got this the wrong ways around? Mayor Forstatter is Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Sex Matters, the human rights charity, joins me now. Were you aware of this case in Avo already? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, we've been following it for a while.
What do you think my listeners need to know about this case, and particularly about the nurse?
It's absolutely appalling. I mean, you read out the story. This is a nurse with, I think, 12 years of unblemished good service. She was dealing with a patient who was a prisoner transferred from prison in urology. I think she was fitting a catheter. So this was a patient with male anatomy whose medical record said that he was male, who was 6 foot tall and a paedophile. And she, you know, walked into the sort of curtained cubicle and called him Mr. That's all she did, perfectly polite. And then when it kicked off, it was her that was investigated by the hospital and reported to the Nursing and Midwifery Council, so she could lose her career.
How have we got to the point where a nurse with an otherwise unblemished career has now lost her job, could effectively lose her entire career, and someone who is a violent, racist paedophile is almost allowed to walk scot-free?
It's because it's a lie. It's a lie that men can become women. And people thought that this lie was a kindness and that people could accommodate it. I mean, you can accommodate all kinds of things. You know, you can accommodate somebody wants to be called by a different name. People want to express themselves in different ways. You can accommodate all kinds of things. But what you can't do is think that men can become women. And when you put that into things like professional codes of conduct, what happens is you sort of crank the handle on disciplinary processes, and what comes out is this complete Alice in Wonderland upside down expectation about who and who isn't at fault in a situation like this.
Let's broaden this out. We're still awaiting the government publication of Equalities guidance. How crucial might that be in cases such as these, do you think, Mayor?
The law is the law, and it's very clear that the guidance is about things like single-sex services. This was not a single-sex service. This was a hospital. This was a nurse doing her job. The RCN, the Royal College of Nursing, who she's turned to for support as her union, have said they can't do anything until the guidance comes out, which is utter nonsense. If they can't do anything without the guidance, they shouldn't be drawing a salary until the guidance comes out. There's nothing to wait for in the guidance to say, as you said, you read out Jennifer Melly's story. Mm. It's very clear she was acting as a professional and she was turned upon by this paedophile who called her racist slurs. The idea that you should need to wait for guidance to see who is acting decently in this situation is a nonsense.
Grateful for your time, Mayor Forstatter. Thank you, your Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Sex Matters, the human rights charity. And now over to you. So the paedophile who uses the N-word and attacks a nurse just gets taken back to jail. Remember, a paedophile. And the nurse, who's endured physical assault and being called that word, is suspended. Great work by Epsom and St Helier University Hospital's NHS Trust. Cracking work there. You've got your priorities right, haven't you? who might take calls on that, but it's juries or jury trial you want to talk about. Gary's in Alton. Gary, you've served on juries, is that right? How many times? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Three times, actually. I'm not sure what I did for that. But anyway, a couple of points. First of all, I think on balance, I do think that they should be banned. To your earlier caller's points, the time wasting is absolutely immense. Mm-hmm. I won't go there. The story I did want to tell you, true story, and one of the reasons that I feel they should be banned is because actually not all people, not all of our fellow citizens are really up to this. Mm-hmm. So I had a trial that ended on the 21st of December about 8 years ago. The judge asked for a unanimous verdict. Mm-hmm. We were 3 hours in the deliberation room. The chairman took a vote to see where everybody's head was, and we had 10 for guilty and 2 for not guilty. And I have to say the 2 for not guilty were, let's say, slightly older ladies.
Right.
We didn't reach a decision. We were sent home. We came back the next day, and there was lots more discussions. One of the ladies said that actually she had just heard something from somebody else in the jury room that she didn't realise there was a material fact. And therefore, she flipped from being not guilty to guilty. And then one of the jurors turned to the last lady and said, "Can I just ask you, what is it exactly that you think means that this fellow is guilty?" And she just turned around and said, "Well, look, don't get me wrong, I do actually think he's guilty. But right. She said, I'd feel really bad if he would go to prison for Christmas."
Oh.
So, at which point, you imagine what happened in the room, you can imagine what happened in the court, and actually I did say at that very point that this guy isn't going to prison for Christmas because there'll be a sentencing hearing in January. Right. And then she was relieved. So there we go, that was it.
You got it over the line because he didn't go down for... Dear God. Okay, you have far more experience than I. To scrap them in all but severe cases, what would you say?
Yeah, I do think so. But I think we should also be fair here, Nick, which is, you know, another situation. I remember sitting virtually the whole day in the jury room bar the lunch we were sent out for, and the reason given was that the lawyers and the judges were discussing legal matters. So that was a whole day wasted. But the reality is, had they got through those legal discussions, they would have pressed the button and the jury would have come in and we would have started the trial. So it's a really, you know, it's a really, really complex system. And as I said, having sat through essentially 6 weeks of this over that, what was it, 15-year period, you get quite an insight.
I bet you do. Gary, I have to move. We'll go a minute late to news because I want to get one call in on the... Thank you, Gary, on the nurse story we've just discussed. Neil in Bracknell. Neil, your take on this nurse. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you. I was just listening to your preliminary talk about the nurse.
Yes.
I think it's just absolutely disgusting.
I totally agree with
the lady you had on that you were talking to, in the fact that, yes, she can get the support. Her management at that hospital, their heads should roll. They are equally responsible for what's happened to her as the guy who, am I getting it right, that he attacked her and called the and used N-word, the N-word
yes,
towards
so the,
her?
So the trans paedophile attacks the nurse and calls her the N-word, lashes out at her, yeah.
Yeah, so she has done nothing wrong. As you quite rightly said, she just went in and said, "Mister, morning, mister, afternoon, whatever the time of the day it was."
Yeah.
Which is quite correct.
And was prepared to call him John Smith or whatever it might be, but that wasn't enough for him. Neil, I'm glad we got one call on because this is an important story, but the music means we have to move on. Have yourself a safe day because we have got to get to the news. And coming up after the news, more industrial action from our resident doctor. Doctors, Daniel Elkaliz is Chief Executive of NHS Providers.
We all know that the task before Christmas is, can we discharge as many patients back home as possible? And that requires all hands on deck. So it's not fair to patients and it's not fair to all of the other staff.
Plus, alarm over children as young as 3 regularly using social media. And welcome... from Fawlty Towers will be with us towards the end of the hour. 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The use of jury trials is expected to be scaled back as part of efforts to cut the court's backlog in England and Wales. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, is expected to restrict them to more serious offences. New trials are currently being listed as far away as 2030. Mr. Lammy's told Nick that juries will remain a cornerstone of the system, but aren't required in every case.
If you today went into Currys, you stole an iPhone, should you be able to opt for a jury, or should that be dealt with by the magistrates or by a judge? That's the sort of question that I'm looking at. If you were arrested for possession of cannabis, should that be dealt with by a jury? Should you be able to opt for a jury?
Mr. Lammy has confirmed two prisoners are still at large after being released from jail in error. A total of 12 inmates have been freed by mistake in England and Wales over the last 3 weeks. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned a pre-Christmas doctor's strike will cause untold anxiety. Members of the British Medical Association in England are planning a five-day walkout from December the 17th. They've accused Mr. Streeting of failing to put forward a credible pay offer. Nick Hume, an NHS Trust chief executive, says hospitals will do their best to minimise disruption.
We certainly maintain all of our emergency services, but we also attempt, as we were successful in the last industrial action, to maintain over 95% of our outpatients and our operations. But it doesn't come without a cost, both a financial cost and indeed a cost to the ongoing services.
Donald Trump's special envoy is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow to discuss the US-backed plan to end the war in Ukraine. The White House says it's very optimistic about reaching an agreement. Ukraine's leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, says there have been improvements, but territory remains the most difficult element of the plan. And Britain's seven largest banks have all passed stress tests carried out by the Bank of England. It means they're able to withstand a severe recession, sharp fall in financial markets, or higher interest rates. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.13. That's up 10. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather feeling colder today with sunny spells for many. Scattered showers developing in the south and west. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Waitrose presents and the main event. One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Anywhere for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you first bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Tuesday, December the 2nd, once known as Junior Now. Resident doctors say there will be more industrial action from December the 17th to December the 22nd. A 26% pay rise is their demand. The third round of strikes since July. 5 days off last month. What level of support do you have for them? In other news, alarm as children as young as three are regularly using social media. We've not heard of books. And then right at the end of the show, to lift the mood, and goodness knows we need it, this hugely, hugely clever and well-known and much-loved comedian, John Cleese.
She's in the hospital, you silly girl!
Yes, hold her there!
I can't! I've got too much to do. Listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right. So...
Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you were listening to LBC yesterday, you heard the news that the doctors, we resident doctors or junior doctors as they were once, will walk out from 7 a.m. on December the 17th to 7 a.m. on December the 22nd. The 14th time they've staged industrial action since March 2023. Wes Streeting says it's a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas, and they've announced that, of course, of these dates will go ahead. The third round of strikes, as I say, since July. Let's turn straight. Well, let's talk a little bit here. The previous walkout by the BMA was just last month, and some of you may recall I was joined in the studio the day it began by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, and someone called in who was a doctor and said he was considering going on industrial action. This was the Secretary of State's response.
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise, the highest in the public sector 2 years in a row. And on those things that you've just mentioned, you say they take time. Yes, they do, because it is complicated. So to hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough, and because the leadership of your union are not honest enough that some of this change takes time, is extremely irresponsible. It is extremely unnecessary. And the other listeners to this show who have not had a 28.9% pay rise, whose taxes are paying for our National Health Service, and who are receiving a substandard service, not least because of the damage that these rounds of industrial action are doing, I think people will be shocked by the BMA's reprehensible behaviour. So don't tell me you don't want to be out on strike, because that's exactly where you are. You made that choice, own it, and own the damage it will do to your patients.
So that's how Mr. Streeting addressed that caller, Niraj from Harrow. Let's bring to the conversation Dr. Callum Parr, who is a resident doctor, deputy chair of the BMA Residents Doctors Committee, joins me now. Had the health secretary addressed you in those terms, how might you have responded, doctor? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think it's a massive shame, the sort of tone that the Secretary of State has taken. This is an ongoing pay and jobs dispute, and we have not seen enough movement from him on pay or jobs. We're facing this ridiculous situation where we have tens of thousands of fully qualified doctors in the NHS being turned away. That happened last year, and currently Wes Streeting is overseeing an even worse recruitment cycle happening right now, where we are yet again turning away our best and brightest. We wrote to him 2 weeks ago asking for him to come back to the negotiating table, and he's decided not to even reply to us, not even a letter. So we are in this situation having to take strike action again because of complete inaction from the Secretary of State.
When did you last ballot your members on the possibility of taking industrial action?
So we last balloted a portion of our membership on pay and jobs in September, so just a couple of months ago.
But with a full ballot, that was a portion. When was the last full ballot?
So the last full ballot came out in July 2025, where over 90% of our members voted in support of strike action.
Right. Why has there not been another full ballot since?
That's just because of the way that the trade union legislation works. So you get 6 months of a mandate. We have already announced that we are going to be reballoting our full membership, and that is coming this month. So in a matter of days, we will be reballoting our full membership, because the strength of feeling when I'm at work and I'm speaking to other resident doctors, it is one of outrage. They are facing unemployment on a yearly basis. We're facing situations where you are having to fight sometimes 21 other doctors just to get one spot to become a psychiatrist. That is absolutely ridiculous when there are waiting lists for patients seeking mental health treatment that are already over 2 years. So we are just asking for Wes Streeting to address that, and so far he hasn't done that.
But you're not, are you? Do you not think that, and you're probably aware that in the polling of the general public, not polling of your colleagues, support has now started to diminish, and you're in the mid-40s% when you were enjoying support in the mid-60s. And that is because when it comes to pay, and doctor, I think you have a very valid argument as regard jobs, but when it comes to pay, all but 29% over the last 3 years is jolly acceptable to almost everyone listening to this show.
I think when you look at the pay uplift that we've had, that's in the context of almost two decades of real terms pay cuts.
Yes, but the people
that's
in the profession
in
now weren't
really
even they were at primary school then.
So there are resident doctors who I work with who were resident doctors back in 2008. When I think of myself, I started to prepare to apply to medical school back
You're
around
so
2013.
Wrong on this, doctor. I absolutely respect you for your training and your experience and the job you do. I think you are on such fertile ground as regards jobs, but as regards pay, doctor, you're a bright bloke. It's just not ringing through with the general public. They'll get you on jobs. They can get that. But 29%, that they dream of that, doctor.
So I think it's important to recognise that retaining our doctors who are already working in the NHS is really important.
Yes.
And what we've
yes.
seen from from our regulator, the GMC's own figure, is that over the last year, more doctors applied to go abroad than in the previous decade. We're reaching record numbers of doctors leaving. You have to look at why that is, and that is because we are not paying our doctors fairly. So yes, we need to recruit doctors. We absolutely agree on that. And that is what we're pushing for. But we also need to make a real push to retain those doctors. We've made very clear to the Secretary of State that we are not asking for our pay to be restored overnight. And that is a journey that he himself has recognised. We are willing to do this over a number of years. The benefit of that would be that would take strikes off the table for multiple years. That is what we are willing to negotiate
on.
It's the Secretary of State that's not doing that.
You see, I think we're just not going to see eye to eye on the money side of it, because I think to ask for 26%. Let's have a final question. Why so close to Christmas?
So we finished our strike action a couple of weeks ago, as you outlined. We sent a letter to Wes Streeting as soon as it finished, asking him to come back to the table. We gave him 2 weeks. He decided not to even send us a letter. It seems like the only language that the government speaks is strike action. It's a shame that that is what it takes for the Secretary of State to acknowledge that, you know, unemployed doctors is something that is unacceptable to the general public. So
I will leave it there, Doctor. Thank you. Dr. Callum Parr, thank you for the job you and all your colleagues do. You are a resident doctor. Your Deputy Chair of the BMA Residence Doctors Committee. Listening to that is Dr. Chris Strether, who's Regional Medical Director for the NHS in London. Can I come to you, Doctor, for the patient side? What do you think, what do you maybe fear might be the impact for patients and hospital administrators? Good morning.
Yeah, morning. So this is causing enormous disruption to the service and especially to patients. So it's a busy time of year. We're trying to do as much planned activity as we can before the Christmas period when it eases down a bit and try and get people home for Christmas. There's also an earlier peak in flu, so hospitals are very busy. The London Ambulance Service one day last week took more calls than they normally do on New Year's Eve, which is the busiest day of the year.
Gosh.
And so it's really bad timing. And the industrial action erodes at the goodwill of other staff, of other clinical staff and resident doctors that aren't going on strike, and consultants who have to fill in the gaps at a time when they're busy. And it's taking them away from other planned care for patients, which is causing harm, I'm afraid. It causes delay and therefore causes harm.
Doctor, what does this other BMA claim? And I think I've probably made it quite plain where I am on the money, but on the fact that there are thousands of jobs that these residents can't get, how true is the claim they're putting forward there in your view?
So I heard your interview, and I think you dividing into two things is exactly the right way of doing it. On the money, they had a generous pay rise last year, given the state of the public finances and the state of other lower paid workers and, you know, the cost of living crisis. It's not realistic to ask for more money. However, the conditions they work under, we need to improve. They've been eroded slowly over a period of many years. And we'd like to have, you know, an active conversation with resident doctors about how we improve postgraduate medical training to give them job security and more certainty about where they'll be working and when. And the distraction of the industrial action is stopping those conversations taking place. So I'd like people to stop talking about money, to abandon the industrial action because it's harming patients, and then sit down and have a grown-up conversation about improving resident doctors' lives and their job security, which is really important to me.
Lastly, if it is true, as asserted by my other contributor, that the Health Secretary hasn't even responded, hasn't even replied to a letter they sent, that's not the way to bring about a deal, is it? He should surely be engaging with them.
Yeah, I don't really want to get involved in the to and fro about letters, but Jim Mackey, the Chief Executive of the Health Service, wrote a letter to them earlier this week asking them not to go on strike, which they then almost immediately announced a strike. So I don't really want to get involved in a tit-for-tat exchange of letters, but it's but I think that the important thing is to stop talking about money, start talking about conditions and postgraduate training, and come to the table.
Grateful for your time, Dr. Chris Strether, your Regional Medical Director of the NHS in London. One figure we can talk about: when this industrial action started, the level of support for junior doctors was mid-60s, 65%. Now it's almost 20% points down. It's at 46%. This is probably, in fact, the number of industrial actions there have been. So where are you? This is the third round of strikes since July. We'll take your views on that after 9:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The use of jury trials could be scaled back as part of efforts to tackle the court's backlog in England and Wales. The Health Secretary says a plan for another resident doctor's strike in England is a cynical attempt to wreck Christmas. And Donald Trump's special envoy is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow. LBC weather, feeling colder today with sunny spells for many, but showers in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 25 at the A10. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Those queues go all the way back to junction 27 at the M11, which means the M11 southbound is also very congested. Also on the M25, but on the Surrey stretch, there are anti-clockwise queues to junction 13 at Staines, and that's where a car has broken down. On the North Circular Road, there are northbound queues to Gunnersbury Park. A car's broken down, and in Weybridge, it's very busy on the Queen's Road both ways, and that's following an accident. On the trains, Thameslink services are delayed by about 40 minutes across most of their network, and it was after a signal failure.
This is LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Back the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. This is LBC.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. And 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60, max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £250,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm Friday and you could get a call with £250,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only, global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Coming to you, Alex, you'll be the first caller. Let me just read a couple of the notes that are coming in here. Ah, you don't want me to give your name, so I won't read that one, but I will read this one. Paul says, doctors leave the UK for places such as Dubai, not only for an increase in pay, but also for tax-free purposes. You'll never be able to compete with that. This comes in from Jason in Epsom. Doctors are our brightest and our best and should be paid as such. Resident doctors are chronically underpaid compared to international peers. I'd happily tax you more and give it to the medics. Okay, and this one you asked not to give out your name, and I won't. My son is a second-year resident doctor, and as of now, next August, he will be redundant. There aren't the jobs available. 6 years at university, 2 years as a resident under tough circumstances, and nothing to go to. He's not paid enough, but more importantly, he will be redundant. The government does not understand these are young people who want to dedicate their lives to helping people but can't get jobs. And I have kept your name, sir or madam. And that, to me, sir or madam, because I can't use your name, that is the key. And if they were campaigning on that, and the fact that young people such as your son or daughter puts all those years in, that training, all that graft as well, and then there's no job, that, I think, would see support back into the mid-60s, if not higher. But because they've tied it, they want another 26%. It's not surprising that fewer than, well, the roughly 4 out of 10 now, the only number that still have support. Alex in Brighton, thank you for holding. Your view, Alex. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Great show. Big fan. So, I've been a nurse for a long time. I trained in 2000, about 15 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in full support of if the main message was conditions, working conditions, job security.
Yep.
But everyone is going through a difficult time financially in any sector, but particularly those in healthcare, from support workers to nurses to doctors to occupational therapists, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But the pay they're asking for is unreasonable at a time when the entire country is going through huge financial difficulties. And I think it's incredibly selfish, not only on patients, but other staff, particularly patients, mainly patients, but also other staff within the NHS who have taken far less pay cuts and make up a greater proportion of the workforce. So I'm not in support of a pay strike at all.
Where do you think most hospitals would be, and most nurses, the nursing teams towards the doctors? Would they be saying, look, you've been on strike enough, you've got a 29% pay rise, let's get to work?
It's difficult to say. I think it's a little bit divided, to be honest. I think everyone is in agreement regarding conditions. And I have to be honest, I left the NHS 3 years ago, not because of pay. I took a 10, 15 grand pay cut. It was purely because of pay conditions, working conditions. So I think more or less everyone would be in support of that. But I think it's more divided around the pay. I think what they're asking for is a significant amount more than that will ever be achievable. So, and the offer that was given to them was and is fair, I think.
And lastly, the patients, what do you think the impact could be? You'll know better than I. I would have thought it could be quite busy at December the 17th to the 22nd.
Yeah, it'll be winter pressures. It's very significant, very, very difficult period for the NHS. It always is. They will. Most hospitals will provide some form of cover at great cost as well. Mm-hmm. is the reality, but you know, and other people will take up the slack. So I think in terms of the NHS will try and minimize the impact, but there will inevitably be an impact on patient quality of care. That's inevitable, particularly at a time when pressures are so significant during the winter.
Do you enjoy it?
Do I enjoy being a nurse? Yeah, I love it. It's I wouldn't do anything else. It's integral to who I am, what I do. But you know, it's a difficult job, particularly in the NHS, as more than any other, you know, private sector. It's a very difficult job, but very rewarding.
Alex, thank you for the work you do, and thanks for your input. Nigel's in Mayfair. Nigel, your level of support for the resident doctors. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I've got 2 points, if you allow me, please. If I can just quickly address a point by your anonymous texter. He says her son's going to face redundancy from being a doctor. I thought the NHS England plan was to get an extra 60,000 doctors. I'm looking at a document now, and more nurses. So I'm a little bit confused by that statement by her.
Right.
The other thing which I think is important to make clear here, it's a shambolic and utter disgrace that people's jobs, which is to preserve life, help people, are going on strike again and again and again after receiving a huge pay rise, something which many, many people in this country could only dream of. It's shambolic, and perhaps people who are affected directly as a result of this shambolic industrial behaviour going forward perhaps could consider suing them if their health is directly affected as a result of it.
What level of support do you think there is for them out there, lastly, Nigel?
I think it's not as strong as people make out. You know, people laud on about doctors are wonderful people. Of course they do a great job. But when they go on strike, they clearly put people's lives at risk. They clearly upset the NHS and they upset the waiting list. And it puts an extra strain on the limited resources, which we keep hearing there is. And let's not forget, the NHS really is not fit for purpose. It was designed 75 years ago for a population of 25 million less.
Nigel, thanks as ever for your input. We'll come back to this story, but there's a different, excuse me, a different health matter, and this is children, particularly young children's, emotional health. As we read, nearly a million children are hooked on social media before they've learned how to read, according to research. More than a third, some 37%, of 3 to 5-year-olds now use at least one app or site, up from 29% a couple of years ago, despite clear links to anxiety, speech impediments, poor sleep and bad behaviour. Analysis by the Centre for Social Justice of data from regulator Ofcom suggests that number, 814,000 preschool children are active on social media platforms. That's gone up all but 25%. Well, more than, I'm so sorry, more than. That's gone up 220,000 in a year. What are the dangers? And goodness me, if you're fortunate enough to have a child or children, and think of how many people try and can't, surely you've heard of books. The idea of just giving a child, effectively giving them a laptop, Well, let's speak to an expert. Noel McDermott is a psychotherapist and founder of Mental Health Works Limited, who work with parents and young children concerning social media. Thank you for coming on. Mr. McDermott, when you heard those figures, you've probably read copy of this already. Your initial reaction. Good morning.
It's a disaster, and parents need to understand it. Young children, their personalities and minds and brains are still forming. And whatever you put in front of them is what the adult is going to be. And we don't really want that. Kids, young children in particular, don't have enough psychological development to be able to make the distinction between real and not real. And these social media platforms already blur that distinction. That's why they're so powerful. That's why they make billions from them, because they can get inside your head and convince you of things that are not necessarily true.
I know I can rely on you not to say any names, but have you worked with young people? Have you helped them as a psychotherapist? And what sort of issues have they told you about?
Yeah, we tend to work at the more extreme edge, so, you know, forgive me if I discuss that. But the anxiety, the depression, the body dysmorphia, eating disorders, suicidal ideation, please excuse the triggering terminology. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All these things are rampant on those profiles. You have things called pro-ana sites, which lord anorexic bodies. You have, which should be illegal and hopefully will be illegal, but there are ways around it. So there's an awful lot of darkness out there which is unregulated, and the social media platforms don't want to be regulated. They kick up a fuss any time. It's a bit like when people were arguing about having safety belts in cars, you know. Do you remember Clunk Click Every
Yes,
Trip?
Yes, Clunk Click Every Trip, Barbara Castle. I even remember the name of the Transport Secretary who brought it in, Mr. McDermott.
And people, I remember when it came in, and I remember people at the time going, this is an infringement on my personal rights, etc. But it saved lives, and it's time we recognise that we need to start saving lives.
Well, I mean, that's very powerful speak. When you say saving lives,
yes.
you're saying, well, sorry, then ultimately what is the grave conclusion to which this could lead us?
This is the largest unregulated social experiment on the planet ever. And it's not going well at the moment. It's just not. And we need to come to terms with that.
What's happening in the kid's brain when he or she is bombarded with these sorts of messages?
All right, when we're born, very brief neurological stuff, when we're born we have far more brain matter than we're going to need. Every interaction we have forms neurological strata, forms actual physical structures inside our brain. And until 24... the age of 24, that is in overdrive. Within the years 2 to 4, I would say, even more. It's so extraordinary. People want to see how this works. You can just Google now, if you Google severely neglected children's brains MRI studies, you can see children have been neglected, what happens to their brain development. So our brains develop through interaction with the world. That's the bottom line. Whatever you're interacting with is going to form your personality. What we want our young children in particular to be interacting with is kind, loving adults in their life and real world events so that they can form a personality structure which is stable and based upon what we need as social animals, which is attachment to human beings, not attachment to machines.
Lastly, let me read you what one teacher told a survey by the Kindred Squared charity. Quotes, I've got two children in my class who physically cannot sit on the carpet. They don't have core strength. When I went to visit one of the girls in July, she'd never been to a nursery. She'd been sat in a corner sofa on an iPad, so she hasn't developed her core strength, and it's really affecting her whole development. What would you say to that young girl's parents?
I think it's about education for parents. I would never, ever sort of get into finger pointing and blaming. As a society, we need to take responsibility for it. So the corporate parent...
It's not my fault, respectfully, Mr. McDermott. What am I meant to do?
The corporate parent needs to take this on board because, you know, an individual parent can't regulate Facebook. That's not possible for them to do. They can't regulate Instagram. That's something we have to do as a society, that we have to look at these issues.
Noel McDermott is a psychotherapist and founder of Mental Health Works Limited, working with parents of young people. Thank you for input on that. Well, what would you say to the parents of a young girl who'd spent her entire life sitting on a corner sofa, just looking on an iPad? And then when she went to nursery, she couldn't sit up. Have these people ever heard of books? 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Justice Secretary says jury trials will remain a cornerstone of the court system. David Lammy is expected to announce plans to limit juries to more serious cases in England and Wales to tackle the backlog. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has condemned a five-day pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors in England. The British Medical Association says he's failed to put forward a credible pay offer. The US Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow. It's the latest step in diplomatic activity aimed at brokering a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. LBC weather feeling cooler with sunny spells for many, scattered showers developing in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions, min spend £60, max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve. Actually, this is very relaxed. George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
OK, let's get to calls. Malcolm, I will come to you to talk about the doctor's industrial action. But let's start with this story of the social media, which seemed to be a terrible, almost an abuse of children, sitting a little girl on a corner sofa. So when she got to nursery, she couldn't even sit up. Neil's in Hackney. Neil, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me about this? Good morning.
Yes, Nick, I'm a massive advocate for not giving kids phones. Mm. We've got a 13-year-old and a 7-year-old. No phones, no screens. They read books. They interact with people. They are just a joy to be around.
How much pressure are you under from your 13-year-old so that she can get a...
good as gold, good as gold. I get more pressure and pushback from her mates saying, when can she have a phone? And we're like, she's not getting a phone. She's got a little smartwatch so she can call us after school on her way home and whatnot. But she just knows the drill. And you know why? I went through a major addiction on, Instagram.
Did you?
I had to delete that from my phone. Last night, I went to the Apple store and got them to delete Facebook. It is, honest to God, I'm 40-odd, and it just gets old, yeah. It is pure brain rot. It's so easy just to say no to your kids. Grow up here and just say no. It's so easy.
What do you see your daughter's friends who have got these smartphones and presumably live their life on their phones? What do you see with them, Neil?
Quite rude. When they're around the house, they're just glued to it. They're like, it's like Gollum in the Ring. They just hold on to it, you know, and they're like, they never want to put it down. They're always, where's my phone? Can I charge my phone? Like my kid goes through books like Soft Joe, you know? So it's like, and the little ones just started eating. Don't get me wrong. If the little one finds our phone, she's gone. Like, she's on it like a car bonnet, you know? But, yeah. So, honest to God, it's so easy, everyone. Just...
At what age would you support your daughter having her mobile phone?
So, we're gonna try it out on, like, a little brick phone. So yeah. She can send messages.
But at what age will that be?
Well, she's after it now, so she's 13, so we're sort of like, it is a bit more easier for her to be able to text us, so we're sort of moving into that. But we did look at this Get Brick, so she can have a smartphone, but they take all the apps off it, but I think they're clever auntie kids, so she'll probably find a way around it. So we're going to ease it in on a smartphone and then go from there.
Good luck, Neil. I can hear the effort and determination you've put into that. We might take more calls on that, but we go back to doctor's strikes. They have got the new dates. Let me just remind you, because, of course, with the breakfast programme, you could join at any time, I'm afraid. This is when you might have trouble at your local hospital or elsewhere, December the 17th to December 22nd, starting at 7 a.m. on the 17th through to 7 a.m. on the 22nd. The 14th time they've been staged industrial action since March 2023, the third time since July. And, of course, as we heard from the doctor, they've not actually polled the doctors, not balloted, I should say, balloted the doctors since July of last year. So that's well over a year. They have to within the next few weeks. The public, meanwhile, have gone from a level of support for the junior, now resident doctors in the mid-60s, 66%, to more like 46% in that period of time. So it is declining. Malcolm's in Wigan. Still support them? Good morning.
Yes, I do, yeah. I think the more of the two issues, pay and
jobs.
And jobs. I think jobs is more important.
Totally agree with you.
The key thing is that if you've got junior doctors who are not able to be trained to a higher standard so they can become consultant, then that is a waste of the huge investment that went into training that person to become a junior doctor in the first place. So, incidentally, this use of the word resident doctor is a misnomer, because in the past, up to 2010, doctors were resident. They got free accommodation or reduced price accommodation on the hospitals. But that was actually scrapped by the austerity measures of the wonderful George Osborne. So why are they calling them resident doctors when they're not residents? Why not just use the traditional phrase?
The problem is, Malcolm, I think what you will see has happened is that the next step up for, and we will call them resident doctors, for that is their title, those jobs have probably been frozen because they attract greater salaries. Therefore, if you're trying to balance the books or you're trying to save money, the best thing to do is to freeze those next level of jobs, which is why the doctors can't move up from, without in any way being rude, but without the first tier of the profession, they can't move into the second tier because there's no jobs available in the second tier, so the youngsters can't get into the first tier. It's like a self-defeating conclusion, if you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, that is government policy. And the key thing to remember is that this is a government that spent billions on a failed investment in Ukraine. They've got nowhere.
Well, when you say I don't know this. When you say investment in Ukraine, lastly, it's the help the defence of Ukraine, isn't it?
No, it hasn't helped the defence of Ukraine.
No, but we're not investing in Ukraine.
They've given a huge amount of money to a failing, unelected regime in Ukraine that has been beaten on the battlefield. That's the facts of the matter.
You support Russia in this, do you?
I believe that the Russians have got a legitimate case, which is that Ukraine should become a buffer country. It should not be part of NATO. It should be a neutral country. That's
all right. I couldn't disagree with you more. I respect your position. I think you're wholly wrong. And in fairness, you are taking us off into another area. Not that we won't have a conversation one day about Ukraine, and I look forward to that. But I simply have to say, I just think you're wrong on that. But thank you for your input. Let's talk social media. Let's talk this rather disturbing report, the high number of children, and we're talking pre-nursery children, and this shocking report from one teacher who told a charity that she had two children who started nursery, who couldn't even sit up. Two children in my class who physically cannot sit on the carpet. They don't have core strength. I went to visit one of the girls in July. She'd never been to a nursery. She'd been sat in a corner sofa on her iPod, so she's developed no core strength, and it's affecting her whole development. Friends in Sidcup. Friends, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Yes, hello.
Hello, friends.
Tablets do have a space, but a very limited. I mean, our six-year-old, he's got already three different apps that he's supposed to use for school. I mean, I think that's a bit excessive, to be honest.
What are the apps, friends?
Two of them math. One is like subtractions, the other one is like multiplications, and then the other one is like reading records. So it's
right.
Like he's reading a book, and then he goes into the app, finds the book, and answers a few questions to the book to see if he understood it or not.
And he's still, did you say your son is six?
Yeah, he's six. He's in year two now, so he's seven in January, yeah.
Ah, so he knows about 6-7, I imagine. Not that we're allowed to do that in school. We don't do that, do we?
Oh, no, he doesn't know that. I haven't heard about it until everybody complained about that.
I know, I hadn't either until the Prime Minister. Are you able to, you and your wife or your partner, do you manage to find time to read to him?
Oh, he reads himself. Like he goes through like
you do,
10,
you don't do any more reading
in a session.
You don't do any reading with him now. He's happy to read on himself.
Oh, he reads by himself. He just he comes home from school and he just grabs a book and just goes into the corner, wants to be left alone for a while and just reads.
And where does that come from? Did you read to him when he was a baby?
Yeah, we always read to him. We go through books before bedtime. We have two kids, the other one is three, and nobody goes to bed without having a book first. If we tied on bedtime and it's like, oh, you go to bed, you were already reading before. No, I need another book at bed. Otherwise he won't sleep.
That's brilliant. And did you learn that from your own parents, or is that just something you decided to do with your...
I just like to read from when I was growing up as well. Yeah,
it's great. It unlocks so many... I am so fortunate that my parents, and I suppose my school used to make sure that we read a huge amount, actually. And I've been so lucky to have done it. France, thank you. We're mixing that very important conversation with an equally important conversation. Now, that's probably more the emotional health of our youngest. This is concerning the physical health of all of us, which is this resident, as they call themselves, resident doctor's strike. Stephen's in Liverpool. Public support is dwindling. Where are you on it, Stephen? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Good morning to you. Yes, I think one of the issues that we have at the moment is we have a fantastic NHS. It does marvellous work for people. We often take it for granted. It's always there for us. It sees us from the cradle to the grave. And we rely upon our doctors, nurses and health professionals to get
anymore,
us...
It doesn't anymore, does it, do you think? Don't you think it's overstretched now?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. But emotionally, we are all attached to it so greatly. And I think with the doctor's strike, that there could be that feeling of complacency coming through where people now in society are just thinking, oh, well, it's another doctor's strike. Let's just move on. We'll deal with it. We'll work around it. Yes, my appointment's been cancelled. Oh, well, I'll wait for the next one. And that can be an issue, really. So with the doctors maybe losing support because of public complacency.
Right, okay. So what happens now, then? Isn't it important that they show that they've got full support from their own members? They haven't balloted their own.
No, they haven't.
July last year.
Absolutely. And I think also it'd be better to put it more in the public domain of what the reasons why.
Yeah.
Make it more public. It needs to be more on the headlines, on news outlets more often, rather than being a secondary story. We need to hear the story of the doctors.
That
we
can't
need
get
to hear.
Jobs.
Yeah, they can't get jobs.
Yeah, that is what they should be promoting. Stephen, I agree with you. Thank you. Back to these children and their emotional health. Tom in Surrey, how can children not sit up? Not only are the parents culpable, it's a failure of the system. Health visitors and GPs are supposed to check. Well, let's not let the parents off. My goodness me. I mean, I don't think it should necessarily be for health visitors to make sure that a child isn't just sat on a sofa all day long. Thomas says parents need to fight back. They only allow their children and teenagers old school phones, as in the brick phones, until at least the age of 16, preferably 18, and find 10 minutes to read at bedtime for your children. They will thank you when they're in their 20s. I'm still thanking my parents in my 60s. Samantha's in L Street. Samantha, you're on the radio. What can you tell me about this? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to say, so I have a near 5-year-old boy now. He's got lots of energy. And one of the things we really struggled with is getting him to learn his phonics and things like that.
Yep.
So whilst we read to him at bedtime, we've now given him the iPad in the mornings where we find he was the most kind of hyper.
Right.
And we let him use an app called Reading Eggs where he learns to read.
Okay.
And it has completely transformed his mornings, our
way?
Mornings. He's calmer, he's structured, he's actually learning much faster now.
What do you put that down to?
I think it's partially to do with how the app is formatted. It's exciting for him. He gets that little, you know, rewards, like little eggs crack and things like that. You know,
sorry,
dinosaur pops
rewards
out.
Such as what? Sorry, little eggs?
It's called Reading Eggs. So every time he passes a level, a little egg cracks open and a dinosaur appears.
Oh,
something
I see.
Like that.
Oh, that's jolly. Yeah, got it.
So it's a lot more exciting for him, but we make sure we limit that time. So he knows he can have it in the morning and he can do that. And then he goes to school, he comes back, and he knows he's going to read later, and we'll try and do the phonics the way that the teachers give us to do it. but I would absolutely stop it there. There is no social media happening for
a very
long time.
What's going to happen when this young man is, say, 5, 6, 7 years older, and we start with the pressures of starting or secondary school, first 2 years? What are you going to do then, do you imagine, Samantha?
I would like to think very strongly that I wouldn't allow any social media. I really believe that I would stop it. And I know it's going to be hard if his friends are saying, but so-and-so's got it and I want to have it and I'm being left out. I understand that. And maybe speak to me again in 5 years' time, what I would like to think.
All right, let's put it in our diaries. Whether I'll still be here, well, hopefully I'll still be alive in 5 years, whether I'll be sitting in this desk, who knows. Samantha, look after him. Thank you. Coming up after the news, you'll be hearing from John Cleese. But what's his favourite there were only ever 12. What's his favourite episode of Fawlty Towers?
Spoons, eh? I'm sorry? Spoons. I beg your pardon?
I understand you're in the spoon trade.
Oh, well, yes!
Ah,
yes.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah. How absorbing for you.
Yes, well,
so much more interesting than being a hotel inspector!
You have to be of a certain age, but if you are, you're just chuckling. John Cleese with us after this. 9:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Jury trials are expected to be limited to more serious offences as part of a courts overhaul in England. The health secretary's warned a pre-Christmas doctor's strike will cause untold anxiety. And Donald Trump's special envoy is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow. LBC weather feeling colder today with sunny spells, wind, some showers in southern and western areas, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 27 at the M11 to 25 at the A10. It's following an accident where two lanes are closed. Also very busy on the M25, clockwise from junction 2 at the A2 to 3 at the M20. And that's after an accident. Very busy on the North Circular Road, northbound up to Gunnersbury Park. A car has broken down. And also, since St Mary Cray, the High Street is blocked northbound for emergency gas works. On the trains, Thameslink services are severely disrupted across their network, and also London Northwestern are suspended between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey because of the ongoing problems with the overhead wires.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Still searching for a bit of certainty regarding the abolition of many jury trials, and do doctors really need to go on strike again?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Roll up, it's time for the raffle.
Ugh, everything costs a fortune these days. Even my mobile bill.
Well, yeah, you're with a big mobile network. I'm with Lebara. Their prices haven't gone up since 2020 and they're rated 5 stars on Trustpilot.
5 stars? For customer service?
Yep. Real people on the phone every day from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
And the winning number is 10!
No, from £5 a month.
Lebara, the smarter mobile network.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No. Styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
You're already looking at the Galaxy Watch Ultra with Galaxy AI to provide health tracking and insights. Need another reason to buy? Here's one. You can now save £150 off thanks to our incredible Black Friday event. The upgrade you want and the best deals you probably hadn't expected. But let's not hang around. This deal won't. The Galaxy Black Friday event is on right now. Buy yours at Samsung.com. Purchase from Samsung.com by the 2nd of December.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606093.
After all the doom and gloom that we've had to talk about, children's mental health, the budget and goodness knows what else, doctors going on strike, how wonderful to spend the last 6-7 minutes enjoying ourselves. And an absolute privilege, as I say, sometimes the benefit of doing this job is when you meet your heroes, and here's one of the greatest. John Cleese is in the studio with me. Here he is, cheering.
I'm glad I'm one of your heroes.
Yes, indeed.
I deserve it.
You do.
A quite remarkable person.
You are a remarkable person. We're going to be talking about the play for 40 Towers and the book for 40 Towers. But here, John Cleese is the first question. This is 50 years old.
I know.
If I take you back to when you wrote this, if we go back 50 years from 1975, we're almost Laurel and Hardy and Buster, you are the Buster Keaton of modern comedy. But so how come this is endured in a way that Laurel and Hardy was not like it was in the mid-70s, because I was watching you at school?
Yeah, I don't know why it doesn't date. I mean, I can tell you why Python doesn't date, because we were very smart, you see. We made a film that was set in the medieval period, and we made a film that was set at the time of Christ. Those can't date.
Right.
That was clever.
Right.
But why Fawlty Towers doesn't date, I don't know at all. It's just a particular moment in English history when I think everything was relatively calm and nothing much was happening. And people can accept it. It's not dating at all. And it's 50 years, you know?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I once got a series of CDs which had all the episodes on, and you sort of narrated between them. You gave a little bit of that. And on that, I remember you saying that you thought if you were forced to hold up one ep as your particular favourite, it would be Hotel Inspectors. Why so?
I just thought that Bernard Cribbin's performance, we had so many great performers coming on the show, Jeffrey Palmer, Joan Sanderson, but I thought Bernie Cribbin's was actually, he got the gold. I'd never seen such a wonderful performance and such a nice man. And for him, I think that's what I would choose. If you asked me on a different day, I might say something different,
because yes.
I do find bits of the dead body. You know, Kipper and the Corpse.
Yeah.
I find bits of that, particularly when Manuel goes on strike and gets in the basket, and then the laundry people come and take the basket away, not knowing that Manuel's in it, and I come to show the guests the dead body of the person they've come to meet. No one in the basket. I just think that's a very strong bit. And there's a lot of Basil the Rat, especially the moment when he offers him the box of biscuits.
Oh, and the rat.
And Connie is operating the rat from a sort of rod underneath that goes through the door, and then the rat is looking towards
but
him.
If you want to talk about one with the ensemble of actors, The Anniversary.
Oh, isn't that good?
Oh!
Every person who carried the episode on their own. Ken Campbell. Oh,
genius.
I loved Ken. Did you ever see his roadshow?
No, I did not.
Oh, it was extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it. It was almost like a circus on stage. And he was so wonderful in that. That's another one, you see.
Yeah, tremendous.
Because the talent is extraordinary. And I have to tell you that the talent in this second production...
Yes, come on, let's talk about it.
Well, it's on tour, and it's going to be on tour to the end of July. And what worries me is the fact that each week we sell more than 100% of the seats. I'm not kidding. Five out of the last 6 weeks, we're selling 120% in Plymouth. What is that, fighting in the stalls or what?
How are you going to get through? 40 Towers, the play. It's on tour, gosh, for about the next 9 months, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, to the end of August. And it's a really wonderful production. I got a message from people in Southend where it was last week, I think, saying that they could not believe how good the cast was. And that's what I'm so proud about, because there's so many good comedy actors and actresses in England. We should be celebrating them, but there isn't the writing. And in the case of the BBC, I think there isn't the executive understanding of how to nurture comedy, which is why there's not much great comedy these days.
Why is comedy no laughing matter at the BBC now?
I think it's because John Burt turned the BBC into a bureaucracy. So instead of being 50% by bureaucracy, it became 100%. And bureaucrats are not very good at humour because they try to decide things in committee. And you can't write comedy in a committee.
But the days when you must have been in the canteen or whatever it was, the restaurant, and there's Graham Garden, there's Willie Rushton, and there's John Cleese.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, that was an extraordinary college or whichever in which to grow up.
What was so lovely about it is we all had a tremendous respect for the music hall tradition, you know, Frankie Howard, people like that, Tommy Cooper. Genius. I mean, the funniest man I've ever seen in my life. So you had some very good people coming up through the universities who had this tremendous respect for the music hall tradition, and we started playing and working together. I have a record of Peter Sellers working with Peter Cook, I used to go up to Yorkshire Television to do shows with Les Dawson, who I thought was a scream. And there was a wonderful fertilization of these different groups all coming together in different forms.
Why does that not work now, John?
Because it's too spread out. The whole idea of handing shows out. I mean, it was wonderful when there was a kind of collection of talent at the BBC. Well, nobody... No. What's the word? Nobody...
works together.
They don't join up and sit and have coffee together. That's what creates a great culture. And that doesn't happen anymore. And the other thing is that they use a lot of committees to make decisions about, which is rubbish, because very few people understand comedy.
Yes.
And in my day, you had a few people like Jimmy Gilbert and John Howard Davis who did understand it, and they were able to produce a stream of wonderful comedy.
We're coming to the last couple of minutes, that we're together. Tell us about the book, Fawlty Towers Faults. What's the biggest fault? Where do you start? What's your favourite fault?
Favourite fault? Oh, I think when he gets the duck. And really thinks he's got the duck, and he takes the lid off, and it's this awful raspberry.
But even then, I've read, you actually selected a certain thickness of a branch with which to bash the Austin 1100.
With the car,
because
yeah.
It couldn't be too hard. You discarded lots of branches.
That is the weirdest thing about comedy. Very small variations make all the difference. But it was a lovely experience. But people used to say, did you enjoy making? And I always used to say, there wasn't time. We had 5 days to learn 140 pages, you know. That was why we had to have all these wonderful people like Basil Henson and Joan Sondheim. You know, they could do it.
Yeah.
But the trouble with comedy, as I used to say, was that even producing the program was a bit of a feat. Whether it was any good was kind of coincidental.
And why only 12, John?
Because in those days they did everything in 6s and 7s and 13s, because it was a quarter of a year.
And you talk briefly about a reprise, but you don't see that happening.
My daughter's been writing something which is a very different thing with me and her in it, but I'm there as Basil, but much older and rather nicer.
Nicer? Yes. I hope you'd be grumpier.
Well, I'll do my best. But she's done a really wonderful first pilot. I read it last week and it's extraordinarily good. But
when are we going to see it, John, please?
It'll be a long time before we see it, because these things take a long time. In the meantime, we've got the tour and the book, which is, for anybody who enjoyed the TV series, will enjoy the book, because it's a how we did it. And a lot of it is about humour in general.
The book, John Cleese, Fawlty Towers, Faults and All, My Favourite Moments. The show is Fawlty Towers, the play. The pleasure is all mine. John Cleese, look after yourself. Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
Take care.
Have me in again soon, please.
I promise I will. We absolutely will. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank
Thank you, Nick. Nice to see you, John. You are listening to LBC. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. And I'm going to take you back to the jury stuff, because if someone had said to me when I was at school they're going to abolish trial by jury, I'd have been signing up for the Sixth Form Debating Society in a state of high dudgeon. And yet, it appears that the Justice Secretary, David Lammy, is going to, well, sort of smooth it through the statute book without a great deal of objection or anger. So I'd quite like to hear some objections and some anger. I'm haunted. Haunted, I tell you, by a caller earlier in this conversation, last week, I think, who was opining about how stupid people are, which is a fairly good grounds not to have a jury service, but then she almost fell foul of the rules regarding the jury room. So are we stupider than ever?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Justice Secretary has told LBC that jury trials will remain a cornerstone of the court system. David Lammy is expected to announce plans to limit juries to more serious criminal cases in England and Wales. It's hoped the plan will reduce a backlog of more than 80,000 Crown Court cases. But former Old Bailey judge Wendy Joseph is sceptical about the potential changes.
Judges may be very good at the law and they may be quite clever people. That doesn't make them any better at finding facts and assessing where the truth lies than anybody else. So if you take away the jury system, you've got one mind working on the problem. If you have the jury system, you've got 12 people.
12 more prisoners have been mistakenly freed in the past month, and 2 are still at large. That's on top of the 91 accidental releases in England and Wales between April and the end of October. David Lammy says the 2 inmates still missing are not violent or sexual offenders, but refused to give further details. The inquiry into the murder of Sarah Everard is set to publish further findings about women's safety. The Angelini inquiry was set up after the 33-year-old was killed by the off-duty police officer Wayne Cousins in March 2021. It is due to report on measures to stop sexually motivated crimes in public places. Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff is due to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow later to discuss the US-backed plan to end the war in Ukraine. The White House says it's very optimistic about reaching an agreement. Ukraine's leader Volodymyr Zelensky says there have been improvements, but territory remains the most difficult element of the plan.
On the topic of security guarantees, we have concrete details from the US, concrete details from Europe. I'd say that these are the three main topics, tracks, but also triggers. We need to be very careful here. I thank our negotiation teams. The plan looks better.
New forecasts suggest UK inflation is set to remain among the highest in the G7. The OECD says it will top the list of advanced economies this year and remain the second highest at 2.5% next year. It's warned growth will slow from 1.4% to 1.2% in 2026. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 11 points at 97.14. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 30. LBC weather, feeling colder with sunny spells for many, scattered showers developing in the south and west, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. I hope that you are well. There is quite a lot to get through today. You won't be surprised to learn I haven't reached any final decisions about exactly what it is we are going to do. We're definitely going to start with jury service, or at least the imminent abolition of many, many jury trials. That is likely to unfold on our watch. We're expecting David Lammy's speech, in which the finer detail will emerge at about 12:30 today. I'm drawn also to the Attorney General calling upon Nigel Farage to apologise two contemporaries who have been queuing up to claim that he racially abused them at school, including some of the worst anti-Semitism imaginable, citing gas chambers and Holocaust and much else. And it just occurred to me that if you were a Jeremy Corbyn fan, if you were still a Jeremy Corbyn fan, albeit that most, if not all, of the accusations levelled at his apparent comfort with anti-Semitism in the ranks of the Labour Party he led were justified and accurate, which I appreciate. If you're still a Jeremy Corbyn fan, you still struggle to accept that, despite all the evidence. How on earth would you account for the fact that Nigel Farage's absolutely rancid anti-Semitism, as recalled by a growing number of his contemporaries at Dulwich College, appears to be going almost unremarked by precisely the same media ecosystem that goes after people accused of much milder offences in a similar sphere, like a rat up a drainpipe? I mean, hand on heart, I'm conscious both of the sensitivities of the issue and of my own confusion at the way in which Farage appears to be getting a free pass even on telling Jewish schoolmates that Hitler was right and simulating the sound of gas showers while bullying them. That is the recollection of at least one former school friend. And I've seen some claims that it shouldn't matter or that no one can remember accurately. I'm telling you now, if you were the victim of racist bullying when you were at school, I don't care if you're 80 or 18, you can still remember it now. You can remember every syllable of it. You can probably remember the little flecks of spittle emerging from the mouth of the boy that was shouting at you and landing on your shoulder or your uniform. So I think we can park that immediately and possibly move on a little later to the question of why Farage once again appears to be getting a free pass on behaviour that, had it been anybody else accused of this, would be an offence egregious enough to see from space. So we took a call, I think last week, from, or possibly yesterday, as I am absolutely fascinated by big stories that I can't muster up an informed and strong opinion on. And it has to be informed. I think when Clive Bull joined us yesterday to pay tribute to the late, great Brian Hayes, he reminded us, really, of the importance of an informed opinion. A strong opinion is not necessarily an informed opinion. In fact, quite the opposite is often true. You have some of the more infamous callers to this program appearing with very, very strong opinions, which, when you pay them the courtesy of presuming that they are built upon evidence and information, they concede that they're not built on evidence or information at all. You can't expect me to know any facts, or you can prove anything with facts, O'Brien. Used to be regular refrains on the show. So the difference between a strong and informed opinion and a merely strong opinion is remarkable, isn't it? And important to track. But I have neither. I don't think I could be much better informed. I don't think there is a sort of trove of information that has been unaccessed by us. I am, for example, well aware of interventions in this space made previously by members of the government, up to and including Keir Starmer, not to mention David Lammy, both lawyers by training and both adamant in the past that jury service was a sort of a sacred cow, an unslayable principle that nobody should ever dare to meddle with. And both of them now, Lammy in particular, apparently comfortable with the idea of jury trials being denied to a rather large cohort of the accused. I tell you how boring I am. I tried to read Magna Carta on a couple of occasions, and I am aware of two things. Trial by jury was a democratic principle enshrined in that document, but also it wouldn't have applied to the likes of you and me. Don't kid yourself. Magna Carta was chiefly about limiting the power of the monarch over the barons. It had very little to do with Joe Schmo or the man on the Clapham ox cart. Quite the opposite, in fact. But again, it is something that has always been there. It would have, I think, felt a little like that old analogy about getting the eggs out of a baked cake. I might have applied to jury trials once. If you were thinking about the legal system and somebody said, we're going to take away trial by jury, you'd have said, that's like trying to get the eggs out of a baked cake. And yet, of course, it isn't. It's a relatively straightforward process under which thousands of cases will become judge-only trials. Burglary, fraud, drug dealing, And